Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Leff. You already know that. And then the role of Wendy today, for the first half of the show anyway, will be played by our friend Andrea Darlis, who's been kind enough to sit in. Hi, Andrea. Thanks for sitting in.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun with you.
As I mentioned, there are days where Wendy just doesn't feel like coming in, and this is one of those days. A lot of people have sick days. She has just don't feel like coming in days, and she's using one of them today.
It's like a half day, like a two-hour day.
It's like a Teachers Institute day.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So thank you very much for being here. Wendy will be back for the second half of the show, pending if she feels like it.
Right.
Yeah.
She'll decide, what, like 11:59? Right before
within a few minutes of start
show.
Time. Yes. Yeah. So we usually get a 30-second notice whether or not she'll be here, and we just run from there. You just asked me off air, so let's discuss it on air, about last night's Grammy Awards. You watched the whole presentation. It was like 3.5 hours, wasn't it?
I did. Yeah. My mom came over. We had some dinner and watched the Grammys. And it's funny to watch it with my mom. I love it because the Beyonce performance, I'm sure you saw it. You know,
I'm still trying to figure out what that was.
Yeah,
I have no idea what that meant.
My mom did that same thing. She's like, this is ridiculous. I want to hear, you know, Single Ladies, whatever song.
Yeah.
She wanted, and I kind of agree to a point, I wanted to hear a little more dancing. And,
yeah.
But I understand her message. You know, it's motherhood and women empowerment. And it was cool that her mom introduced her.
Right.
It was kind of neat.
It was.
And then she had the show, you know, basically going on behind her, too, on the screen. So I thought it was different. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people were like, what the heck is Beyonce doing?
It was interesting, but I have no idea what it meant. Which is, in all honesty, that's a good thing. Because if you're an artist, you want things to sometimes be open to interpretation.
Right.
So it was my wife and my daughter and I all watching it, all thinking we knew what it meant. So we pooled our resources. I think I know this part. She knows this part. She knows that. I'm still not positive we knew exactly what she was going for, but it was entertaining, I guess.
It was. The costumes were beautiful.
Yes.
You know, I think it was cool that Blue Ivy, that's her daughter, by the way.
Right.
Steve, when I was talking about that earlier, Steve said, yeah, that's a child.
It sounds like a nightclub, doesn't
yeah,
it? Someplace you'd go after work with your friends.
It does. But yeah.
You guys want to meet at Blue Ivy later? They have half-price tutors. Yeah, we'll go. That'll be great.
Great drink specials.
Oh, frozen drinks all night? I'm in it. Blue Ivy.
But didn't you think that was kind of cool? Like Blue Ivy was there watching her mom perform?
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah.
Huh?
Honestly, I kept waiting to be able to figure that song out and what was going on, and I never did. And I said to my wife and my daughter, I'm going to have a nightmare about this. And then it wasn't a nightmare, but it continued during my sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what part? Can you talk about it?
It was just a bunch of pregnant ladies doing a crazy dance. And I like in my sleep, I'm like, oh, wait, this is still from the Beyonce thing. Why is this still continuing on?
Did you wake up and go, wait, what the heck just happened?
No. I just let it happen. All right, here's what, and I didn't realize this last night. I've realized this in the past, but it keeps being reinforced. And I don't know if it's just me or if other people feel this way too. I love music. Music to me is such an integral part of life. When I'm in the car, when I'm at home, I always have music on. I just love music. And yet, it's very hard for me to sit and watch people perform music.
It's almost like somebody said, you know, you love movies, you love the Oscars, but it's like saying, okay, you know what? Everybody get up there and perform.
Right.
You know, perform or act.
Right.
Perform, you know, different
sketches.
Yeah,
at the Oscars, they've already done their work.
Yeah.
So they're either rewarded or not for their work. But at the Grammy Awards, it's people just constantly. And you say to yourself, well, that's a good thing, right? They're mm-hmm. singers and performers. That we want to see that. That'll make for a better show. But I get very jittery just watching people play the guitar and sing, or playing whatever musical instrument and singing.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way. It should be.
I really enjoyed the Target commercial.
Yeah, a lot of people said that, Steve.
Should I know who those guys are?
For the Target commercial?
Was that A Tribe Called Quest?
There was an African American guy with red hair.
I think that was Lil Yachty.
Lil Yachty. Guy was cracking me up.
Yeah.
Who is that, Kevin? Why would we know him?
A hip hop performer.
Oh, is he?
From what I understand. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, R&B. Well, yeah, hip hop.
Good
rap.
For Target for taking a chance on picking a guy that many people wouldn't even know. Steve didn't know him. I didn't know him.
I don't think I'm as...
You're not the Little Yachty Target.
I don't have his singles at home. It's Ka-Singles.
You mean his iTunes downloads?
Yeah. There were a lot of people dressed like Prince last night.
Yeah, especially Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars was dressed like Prince. The little girl that we just discussed, Beyonce's daughter, was dressed like Prince.
Yes.
I put on some Prince clothes at some point during the evening just to fit in.
You have to. Who knew Bruno Mars could play guitar like that?
Bruno Mars can do, just throw him something and he can use it as a musical instrument. He's so incredible, isn't he?
Unbelievably
so
talented.
Much energy. Although it was weird because he wanted the audience to sing, I guess it's his latest hit. So they were kind of wanting the audience to join in on it. And the audience collectively went, it's too new. We don't know the words. You sing it and we'll just move our heads to it.
We'll just bop up and down.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
I love the mashup. I thought the Metallica, Lady Gaga.
That's interesting.
That's kind of what I was waiting for all night because I love Gaga. I've actually seen Metallica in concert.
Oh.
So, yeah, back in the 80s. Back in the 80s.
Wow.
You know, the rock years.
Yeah.
But I thought they did great. I mean, James Hetfield had his mic issue. You know, I should ask you this because you're a performer, obviously.
Yes.
How can they have so many audio issues
At the Grammy Awards. That was curious, wasn't it?
Did you find that weird?
Yeah, like one would be too many for the Grammys because it's the best of the best, so make it work.
Right.
But there was a running problem throughout the show of things not sounding quite right. Adele is the one that I think is the most notable, and I don't know exactly what went on there, but for people who didn't see it, she was paying tribute to George Michael and started her song and then about 5 seconds in just decided it wasn't on the right key or something, right?
Yeah, she stopped and then she swore and they bleeped it and she apologized. She said, I'm sorry, I want to start again. I want to do this right for George Michael.
Yeah.
And they started again.
Because I guess I should know this, but I don't know this. Everybody expected Elton John to do the tribute to George Michael because they were very close over the years. And one or two other names kept floating around. They're going to do a George Michael tribute. Who should they get? Adele's name I never saw. Were they close? Were they friends?
I don't know. I know Adele loved, you know, she wanted to pay tribute to him. I had heard something over the weekend because I thought Elton John might do it as well. But Elton John was performing a concert, and I don't know if this had anything to do with why he didn't do the tribute.
Yeah.
But he was performing, and he was doing his own George Michael tribute, and they put his picture up on the screen, and Elton John got up. And he just got very emotional.
Yeah.
And he kind of put his hands on his knees, and it took a few minutes for him to compose himself. And then he just explained to the audience they were very close. So maybe that might have had something to do with why he didn't do the tribute. But I know Adele said that she admired him. She loved him.
But then when she was done, the camera kind of lingered on her, and she was emotional all throughout. But when it was over, she was still kind of trembling a bit and crying quite a bit. And I didn't know if I'm guessing that's partially because of the loss of her friend, George Michael. But then maybe it might have played into the fact that she was still upset about the beginning.
Yeah.
But I don't remember exactly how she worded it, but she started singing and then stopped and said something like, I have to do this right for him. He deserves it, or something like that, was very nice.
I think it almost was kind of like the Mariah Carey thing from New Year's. I don't think she could hear.
Yeah.
Because and it's Adele. I mean, the show started beautifully.
Yeah.
I don't think she could hear because her pitch was a little bit, again, I could never sing like this, but she was a little off key.
Her on her worst day is better than most people on their best day.
Exactly. But let me ask, I think I'm the only person on the planet who thought that was a little weird and maybe unprofessional. I thought, come on, Adele,
get
it together. Yeah.
No, I was okay with it.
You were okay with it?
Yeah, I can see where people would say, well, that's not very professional. Make it run all the way through. But she kind of in her head knew the way she wanted it to sound, and it wasn't sounding that way. And I don't know enough about singing to know if you can partially way through the song, if you can switch gears and make it sound the way you want. I think once you establish what the key is, don't you kind of have to stick to that?
Yeah, probably. Otherwise, just scrap it and start again, which is what she did.
And
you know what? And cool. What was cool is that when she won the first award after that, she went up and kind of apologized. She owned it.
Right.
And said, I'm sorry if I offended anybody. I'm sorry I swore. And then they all stood up and clapped for her. So
it's so funny because she's one of those people, I always use the phrase, a voice of an angel. She does. She sounds like an angel when she sings. But I've heard her talk, and her speaking voice and her singing voice don't quite sync up. She's got a much more kind of gritty speaking voice than you would expect Adele to have.
Kind of like not so much of a Cockney accent, but a little bit more, you know, don't give me any crap,
right,
Adele.
Street rough, right? A little bit of that. All right, let's take a break. If you want to jump in, we're talking about last night's Grammys, but other things as well. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy. Our number, 312-981-7200. More after this on WGN. It's Bill Leff, and then Andrea Darlis is sitting in for Wendy, who will probably be by later. Wouldn't be shocked if she stopped in later on. We're talking about last night's Grammy Awards. Did you see them? What did you think? Were you dressed like Prince while you were watching the show? Everybody there was. We're at 312-981-7200. Paul may have some insight as to Adele's situation from last night. Paul, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, guys. Actually, I was dressed as a prince.
Oh, you were?
That's the first.
That's even better.
Even better, man. So listen, so Adele chose a very gutsy version. She rewrote that song to her own tempo, her own melody. It's very difficult for someone to sing just to a specific note. If you heard the keyboard or the piano was playing just one specific note.
Yeah.
So when it's time for, and I'm surprised, I'm wondering, because normally they have an in-ear monitor, and they would play a note for her to hum to it, you know, kind of like a pitch.
Sure.
Order. But as soon as she started singing, I thought, oh no, what are you going to do? And you can't just stop singing and then change your tone. It's too difficult to do that. When she did that, I thought that was very bold for her to stop it 30 seconds in and redo it. And, you know, she did an interview last year after she had technical difficulties. She said that zinged her, and she was terrified about that. So the fact that it happened to her again, she had to be mortified.
Paul, even mention, I know we did this last year, I don't want it to be like last year? She said something like that, didn't she?
She mentioned something about that. I mean, she wanted to knock this out of the park, poor thing. She couldn't do it, and unfortunately, you know, she had to swear and whatever. But I get it. I mean, you're caught up in the emotion of it. But, again, just a very gutsy song for her to choose. And the melody for her to write that. But nonetheless, after she came around the second time around, it sounded okay. I'm glad the audience started cheering for her too and supporting her.
It sounded great. Yeah. When she restarted it, it was perfect.
Yeah, it was
beautiful.
So can I ask Paul, cause I don't know enough about music, when she realizes the key is incorrect and she starts over, is that then up to the musicians to adapt and go either higher or lower? How do they know what to do once she says we got to do a restart?
Well, that's what you do. You just stop and you do it because there's no real safe, fail safe on it. She's practiced. I'm sure she practiced this a dozen times. If that happens, it's at the discretion of the lead vocalist, the front person to
say.
So
it's on her.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's stop here. Now she's probably got a track playing in her ear, that probably some type of tempo, some type of melody that's playing in her in-ear monitor.
Yeah.
I think for her, it wasn't the tempo. I think for her, it was just, she started off on just a slight pitch lower than what was actually being played. And that's why she went 30 seconds and she's like, something's not right here. And then she stopped it. So I think she did fine. And I mean, she even knew it was live. Everyone rolled with it and she came out okay.
Yep. It's hard to top her. Her voice is just stunning, isn't it?
All right, now I feel bad.
You should feel bad, Andrea.
Now I feel
Andrea.
Bad that I said
you want to start the show over?
Yeah, can we
start the show over?
Start from ground zero.
All right. Paul, thanks for knowing this.
All right, take care, guys.
Have a great day. I do have to say this. I really was impressed. It's funny I'm even bringing this up because you had just wall-to-wall great entertainment all throughout the show, but the sets were stunning. I don't know who put the sets together, but the thing with Katy Perry where she kept walking around the house and the fences had giant waves of water on it was really cool. A few minutes later, I don't remember who was singing, but there were giant chandeliers everywhere. It looked like an estate, and they had incredible chandeliers everywhere. I don't know who did the sets on the show, but that was really impressive.
You don't normally do that at your home when you go from the living room to the dining room. There's not like
no. We don't have a set designer at my house. No.
I like the Metallica Gaga set too. I mean, I love her stage dive.
Yeah.
But I literally kept thinking, maybe just because I'm getting older. When I was younger, I would think how cool that was. But I'm going, oh, don't get burned. Oh, don't go too close to the fire.
Right.
Lars is kind of close to the fire.
Right. You watch it with a very different eye as you get older. Somebody's going to pay for that in the morning.
Don't fall.
Don't be crowd diving. That's bad for your lumbar vertebrae. What are you doing?
Even when Corbin fell down the steps at first, I thought, did he hit his foot?
Yeah.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
I like that people like him as much as they do. Like, usually you say to yourself, well, that's just a guy from the middle of the night who does a talk show. Why is he hosting the Grammy Awards? But I think because of those videos that he does, the car karaoke, everyone knows him and loves him. So they just give him extra credit for that. And he deserves it. He's so talented.
He's so likable.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
He's a likable guy.
Did you see the part? If you saw the whole show, you did see the part.
Yeah.
He was urging people to tweet in about the show. And then underneath him, they showed a bunch of tweets that were all purposefully incredibly negative about him. Somebody said, who's this guy hosting, the fat Matt Damon, that kind of stuff. Yeah. There was like six or seven really awful, awful tweets one after another. That's pretty gutsy to do that on national television.
It was. And to grab everybody and start doing karaoke and to just, come on, Faith Hill.
Right.
Come on, Tim McGraw.
Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond, yeah.
You know what was really funny? Sorry, that's, you know what was really funny about the tweets, I thought, was the one positive tweet was at real Donald Trump.
Yeah. Exactly.
Beautiful. Yeah. So well done. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. We've got news in a little bit, and then all kinds of things. It's Bill and it's Andrian for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. It's Andrea Darlis. Andrea is sitting in for Wendy, who will probably stop by the show later on.
I hope so.
I hope so.
It's her show.
Well, if she doesn't, you're here.
I'm here.
It's nice to have you here. There's a new show that just premiered on the Travel Channel. The show is called Trip Testers. The hosts of that show, Jason Kessler and Jeff Miller, join us now by way of the telephone. Hi, Jason. Hi, Jeff. How are you guys?
Hey, good morning.
Thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it. Really quickly, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but in addition to being co-hosts on the show on Trip Testers, you also know each other in real life and are actually friends in real life, correct?
That is true.
So that makes the job a little easier.
It really does. If you're going to be traveling with somebody for a few months in a row, it really helps to be friends first.
Yep.
Did you realize each other's weird habits before you start traveling together? Like who snores, who hogs the bathroom?
Thankfully, we had separate rooms on this journey, so there was no, separate bathrooms whenever we needed them.
That's lucky.
That's very lucky.
We both snore and hog the bathroom.
Oh, no. Then separate rooms is the way to go. All right, give us a quick synopsis. What will people be seeing when they tune into Trip Testers? What is the idea behind the show?
So Jeff and I are both travel writers, and for this show, we basically go around the country and test out your vacation ahead of time to make sure that what you're doing is worth your time and money.
That's brilliant, because all the pressure is on. You look forward all year to that week or week and a half off. You want everything to go good. So I don't know whose idea this was, but that's a perfect idea.
And sometimes you don't know what to do. I mean, right? You get somewhere and you think, okay, there's 9,000 options. What do I do?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, so much of the show is about distilling those 9,000 options into, you know, maybe the six or seven great things that you've got to do in the cities that we're in.
All right, so give us a rundown on the cities you guys have visited so far. I think once you mention the city between Andre and I, we'll probably figure out what the legends are, the things you have to see.
Yeah.
But where'd you guys start out with? I know the first show just premiered a week ago, right?
Yeah, just last Monday we were in Vegas and New Orleans.
Yeah.
Vegas and New Orleans and, separately. Separately.
Yeah.
Separately. And then tonight we're heading to the Big Island of Hawaii. And after that, Memphis.
Okay, so Vegas, I mean, you think gambling, right?
Right.
What else can you do in Vegas aside from gambling and seeing all the cool stuff at the hotels?
I mean, we literally did no gambling for the show whatsoever. We did a lot of other super fun stuff in Vegas. We went to Fremont Street and went on a zip line over Fremont Street.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, have you seen that?
It was incredible.
So Fremont Street, for people who don't know, that's in the old part of Las Vegas.
Yeah, by the Golden Nugget.
Yeah.
Right. We stayed at the Golden Nugget and found out that they have a Shark Tank water slide, which was pretty incredible.
What?
We had an amazing meal at L'Atelier de Joël Robuchon, which sounds extremely fancy, but was sort of more of a high-end meal there. We did so much fun stuff in Vegas.
So you guys knew going in, let's do everything but gamble, because that's too trite. Everybody knows you go there and you gamble. You guys did everything but that.
Right. I mean, you can only spend so much time at a blackjack table, and I guess it depends on how good you are and how much money you brought with you. But once that money runs out, you got to go outside and do something fun, and that's where we come in.
And so New Orleans now, I would think Bourbon Street, 3-for-1 happy hour.
Oh, yeah.
There's other cool stuff to do just besides Bourbon Street, right, New Orleans?
Absolutely. I mean, there's Central Grocery invented the muffaletta sandwich. So we went there and learned how to make that behind the counter. Maybe not as good as Bari Foods or JP Graziano, but, you know, close.
I love a good muffaletta.
We actually got to go behind the counter and make them, which was kind of a dream to get to do that. We went on a carriage ride around the city. One of the most fun things we did was a swamp tour where we actually went on those airboats and got to feed marshmallows to alligators.
Oh, cool.
Do alligators like marshmallows?
Shockingly, alligators like marshmallows. We have no idea, but they love them.
Now, that seems, as an outsider looking in, to be just a little bit dangerous. Was that a little scary, that episode?
So there's a moment that is on the show where Jason was holding an alligator by my face, and I didn't know that it was there. A baby alligator. And I turned and looked, and there was an alligator right up by my nose, and I freaked out. So it wasn't actually dangerous, but there was definitely an element of surprise seeing an alligator in front of my face that freaked me out a little bit.
Now, in a moment like that, is it the producer prodding you to do that, to hold the alligator up to your friend's face, or is that just something that comes to you spur of the moment?
Oh, I just did that to mess with him.
Good.
See, Bill, you always said bring fluff with you.
Yes,
bring
marshmallow fluff, just in case an alligator shows up.
Exactly.
Also, wouldn't you agree with me, New Orleans, I mean, I know it's known for its food and its music, but the architecture in New Orleans, especially the French Quarter, is superior. It's so much fun to look at.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, what a beautiful city, I mean, for sure.
And the grave tours, isn't that kind of a big thing to do, too? Like Marie Laveau, or you go see the different
It's all above
graves.
Ground.
Yeah.
All the cemeteries are all above ground because of where the water plane is underground.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much history there in all of those ways. And, I mean, New Orleans has so much spirit. It's hard to not have a great time even just walking around there.
The other thing I noticed, I've been to New Orleans twice, is there's no 10-minute period, day or night, where there isn't a parade of some sort. They're always having parades.
It's true. I was walking back to the hotel after shooting one day, and all of a sudden there was just a parade with, like, 10 different floats going down the street. I think they were just celebrating the fact it was Wednesday.
Our guests are Jason Kessler and Jeff Miller. They are the hosts of the new Travel Channel series, Trip Testers. It premiered last week, but now this Monday night, tonight, there's back-to-back episodes, correct?
Yeah, back-to-back episodes.
So this is just in the United States. Have you guys thought about doing, you know, Iceland, France, extending it to international?
We can't wait to do that. That's really at the top of the list for season two, if we're lucky enough to get a season two. So definitely tune in tonight at 10 and 10:30 to tell Travel Channel that you want to see more episodes of this.
Cool. Guys, so far, of the cities you have visited, what has been the most pleasant surprise and the most negative surprise?
I would say that for both of us, the biggest surprise was San Antonio. Neither of us had been there.
Yeah.
We both went in sort of expecting not much. I think we both went in expecting to be disappointed. And instead, we really found a city that's really vibrant, really up-and-coming food scene there. We did some really fun stuff there. We ended up learning how to ride a mechanical bull from a professional bull rider.
Yeah.
We raced go-karts. We went to this place that was amazing called the Toilet Seat Museum, which is, like, as weird as it sounds. It was really great. And San Antonio was a city that we walked away from, both of us, going, you know, we really want to go back there. It was really, really great, and it's a total surprise.
I'm surprised the Toilet Seat Museum isn't in Flushing, New York, but that's just me.
Nice.
All right, so that was the most positive. What was the most negative? What were you really looking forward to that kind of fizzled on you a little bit?
You know, the only thing I can point to is when we did go to Vegas, we got to go to that fancy restaurant, L'Atelier de Joël Robuchon, and we were expecting this big 10-course meal, and they had us share two little plates.
Oh.
One was quail.
Oh.
Did you get a shrimp cocktail at least?
We got one afterwards.
Okay, oh, you did? Yeah. You want to fill up.
Yeah.
You do want to fill up.
This sounds very cool. Yeah. And Memphis is next, right? Or did you already do Memphis?
Memphis is tonight, and Memphis was really incredible. We got to record at Sun Studio where Elvis recorded his single.
Great.
I'm a musician, and just being in that room full of history was amazing.
Is Chicago on the docket? Will you guys be doing an episode from our city?
Oh, no question. Yeah. I grew up in Buffalo Grove.
Oh, you did?
Oh, so
it would be an honor to come back to my home city.
So would you recommend doing an episode in Chicago or in Buffalo Grove?
I don't know.
Wait till sweeps week.
Yes, don't give it
away. Save it till sweeps week. The Buffalo Grove week will be your highest rated. So if you did Chicago, and I'm hoping you do, Any idea what you'd jump at? What would be the plan there?
Oh, that is such a tough call. You know what? I would say top of the list, as a tourist thing and as a local thing, would be doing that Wrigley Field tour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The bowels
especially,
of Wrigley, see what's underneath.
Now.
Yeah.
Now you can't get in.
Right. It's jam-packed now.
Exactly. Spring training.
Yeah.
Guys,
spring training.
I hope there's a season two and a season three and maybe a season four. Jason Kessler and Jeff Miller have a new show on Travel Channel. It's called Trip Testers. Tonight, back-to-back episodes, and then from then on in, back to one a week. But that sounds like so much fun for everybody.
It does.
It's actually back-to-back every week. So,
oh, it is?
Next 3 weeks, back-to-back episodes at 10 Central Time. On Monday nights on Travel Channel.
On Travel Channel. Guys, good luck with this. I hope it's a huge hit.
Great. Thank you so much.
Take care. Jason Kessler and Jeff Miller.
Bye, guys.
We've got to do one here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll make a list.
One.
And we won't put the main things on there, like Navy Pier. We'll put, you know.
The more surprise ones.
Yeah, like the Surgical Museum.
Yes.
That kind of stuff.
Yes. Superdog.
I was thinking of Superdog too. Rainbow
cone. Rainbow cone. All right, a quick break and then more show. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200 gets that done. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy on WGN. Andrea, we've had a couple of texts from people wanting to know if Wendy doesn't feel like coming in tomorrow, will you be filling in for the Hometown Voices tour? Can we get you on such short notice?
I'm looking at the Gabe's Place menu right now. I'm not kidding you.
What looks good?
I think that's Eggs Benedict, right? Does that look not look
like? That's what it looks like.
An
yeah.
Eggs Benedict with some tomatoes on the side.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll be there.
You're in.
I mean,
all
to
right.
support you guys, of course, and
thank
then
you.
To eat.
But you always need somebody warming up in the bullpen in case your starting pitcher, you know, blows her arm tomorrow.
Right.
So we'll have you just tossing in the bullpen.
In this case, it'd be like keeping the booth warm.
Right.
Until
that's
Wendy
exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. All right. So on Saturday, another episode of Saturday Night Live. This one hosted by Alec Baldwin. Who has now hosted the show more than anybody else in history.
17 times.
And they showed clips. Did you see the
yes.
episode?
Yes.
They showed clips from him from the very first time he did it. And, of course, he, as you would guess, is a much younger man. And then they made a lot of fun of him for that.
Right.
For why he's aged so poorly.
Who was the actor who was kind of ribbing him saying?
Pete Davidson.
Yeah, hilarious.
Yeah.
He said, well, what were you doing in 1990? He said, I was 3 years away from being born.
Right. And like many people, as you age, the contour of your body changes just a little bit. So Pete Davidson kept asking him, at what point in your life does your face just get a lot bigger and wider and stuff?
I know. It was
very
funny.
Cruel, but very funny.
We have here at the radio station, you know, they take your picture for your ID.
Yeah.
So mine, I think like most of ours, is the same picture. I mean, I've
from
lost
years
my
ago.
Yeah. I think it's at least 17 years old, this yeah. picture. And I've shown it and people will go, oh my God, that's you?
That's polite.
And I try to just like put it into context and think maybe because the photo is grainy.
Right.
Or maybe because they stretched it out. It's like a computer type
right.
picture image.
Or maybe we've all just gotten a little bit older. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
A little heavier.
Yeah,
little...
yeah. All right, so here's the question. Saturday Night Live, this past Saturday with Alec Baldwin hosting, hit a 6-year ratings high. They got the best ratings they've had since 2010.
Wow.
All right, here, I know this will be an idiotic question, but I honestly don't know the answer to this. How come?
Oh,
there's a couple different possibilities.
Yeah.
Right?
It's Trump for sure.
It's got to be. Part of that has to play into it, is that because the climate is such. It's so ready to be made fun of, and Saturday Night Live has been doing it. But other shows are also making fun of Trump's presidency. All the late night shows are doing it. Every show from Bill Maher to John Oliver, which came back last night, to Jimmy Kimmel to Jimmy Fallon to Stephen Colbert, they're all cashing in on Trump's presidency.
Yeah.
But why is Saturday Night Live the one that's really taken off?
I think it's because Alec Baldwin plays such a all of the actors that they have portraying the characters.
Yeah.
Trump, Baldwin's Trump is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon's Kellyanne Conway.
Really funny.
And Hillary,
isn't it?
Too, was off the charts. And Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much she looks and acts like Sean Spicer.
Here's the strangest thing about that. Not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before, nobody knew that Melissa McCarthy was going to show up as Sean Spicer. So the first several minutes of that, even though it was really funny and really well written and really well acted, was just the shock of what you were seeing, was that Melissa McCarthy, who you wouldn't think, like if you were casting Sean Spicer, you wouldn't think, well, the obvious is Melissa McCarthy. That just wouldn't happen. But it was so well done, and she was so funny at it. All right, so the first week she did it, that was the shock value, was that, oh my, it's Melissa McCarthy playing this role. So then all week long, I'm like, do you do it again, or do you run it into the ground by doing it a second time? They did it a second time. They opened the show with it. And I would argue it was funnier the second time than it was the first time.
Completely agree, especially when she was doing the Ivanka.
Yeah.
When she showed the merchandise and the high heels, and they put up the graphic on the screen.
Home Shopping Network.
Right, for $39.99.
Yeah. Very funny.
I think the writers are just so on.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really picking. And again, you can argue, you know, they made fun of Obama. They made fun of Bill Clinton. Phil Hartman was Bill Clinton, right, for the longest time. That was very funny, but there's just something about these actors and their portrayals that are just so spot on.
Yeah. Now, the White House is, according to reports, is bothered by this. Donald Trump himself doesn't think it's dignified to have a woman playing Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer says it's mean and it's over the top. Do you think part of this is the fact that everybody knows that the White House is irked by it? So Saturday Night Live is going, yeah, what are you going to do? We're a satire show. That's how we make our money. We're going to keep doing it.
I absolutely think that they know it and that it needles the White House.
Yeah.
So I think they love it because they had Kate McKinnon playing Jeff Sessions, which, again, I mean, she does the accents perfectly.
Right.
It was like looking at Jeff Sessions, and I'm sure that irked them as well. Another woman, you know, doing a caricature of one of their cabinet.
One of the staffers?
One of the cabinet.
All week long, I want to say Huffington Post originated this, but I've seen other versions of it. People have said, if you really want to mess with the White House, have women play everybody in the cabinet. Yeah. You could just go down the line, and here's a woman in the cast who could play somebody in Trump's cabinet.
Right.
So I don't know if they were influenced by that or what it was, but it is a very peculiar thing. I was trying to remember the other day, I know that men are more famous for portraying women. That has always been a thing in comedy. But I don't remember women going out of their way to play guys that we would know the way that Melissa McCarthy has with Spicer.
Yeah, I can't think back either. And then I think they even took it one step further when they had Leslie Jones
further.
Later on in the show. Because
right.
You didn't think it would come back again.
Right.
And then you have her trying to play Donald Trump as well. And then Vanessa Bayer trying to get in on it. And I mean, that just was, the pylon was very funny.
So what we've had no reaction from the White House yet, but it is a White House that likes to react to things like this. Donald Trump has said over and over again, the show has gone downhill. It's not funny anymore.
It's mean.
Despite that, the ratings, as we pointed out, hit a 6-year high on Saturday. What do you anticipate the word will be from the White House? I don't think they can keep quiet on this. I think somebody, whether it's Spicer or Trump or Kellyanne, somebody's going to say something as to how they take this in. What do you think the reaction is?
I think the reaction is going to be the same as it was before, that they'll try and say, this isn't funny. This
right.
is, you know, been there, done that. I think that what they should do is almost, I don't want to say embrace it, but I think they'd get maybe a little bit of slack if you had President Trump or Sean Spicer or somebody, Jeff Sessions, kind of chuckling with it. And
why
saying,
wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, when Kate McKinnon started portraying Hillary, you know, Hillary Clinton came on the show.
Right.
And I think even Barack Obama might have made an appearance on the show,
too.
You know, it would be hilarious. I mean, it would almost be extending a weird kind of olive branch if you had Donald Trump appearing on the show.
I'm surprised they didn't do that a week ago. I'm so surprised that they didn't say, hey, you know what? At first, it was a little bit of a punch to our gut, but then we thought about it. And it really is kind of funny. But they don't. They just don't seem to see the humor in it.
I think they just create more problems by getting so upset by it.
Right.
If they shrugged it off and maybe played along, it might just go away.
Right.
Now, I don't think this would go away, though.
Right.
I think Alec Baldwin has a job for at least the next 4 years.
You know, years ago, we're going way, way back on this, but when Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In was the, underline it, satirical show on TV, you had guys like Nixon would show up and say, sock it to me, and the country loved it.
Yes.
Wow, the president of the United States is in on the joke. For some reason, Trump and his people just don't seem to want to be in on the joke.
No, and remember Bill Clinton was on, was it Arsenio Hall?
Yeah, he played the clarinet.
He was campaigning. Yeah, playing the sax.
Sax, right.
Yeah, so right. I mean, that, I'm telling you, it would, I think, just really ease a lot of the anger and the angst if you had Donald Trump or the real Sean Spicer maybe appearing on the show.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that down the road. I don't
just
know
not
now.
Yet.
No, I think they're still too agitated.
That's
going to
be
you?
A very a long road.
Don't you think, Steve? I mean, yeah.
Yep. All right, we'll take a break. Steve's got the news, and then there's more shows. Stay here. It's Bill and Andre in for Wendy. You're not Wendy. Who are you?
I can be Wendy.
You snuck up on me.
Hey, baby.
It's WGN. Steve, thanks very much. If you're just tuning in, Wendy is off for the first half of the show.
Yes.
She'll be in later on, but Andrea Darlis has been kind enough to fill in. Thank you, Andrea, for doing that.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
This
not
is
that
fun.
The morning show is not fun.
No, it's a different kind of fun. It's more responsible in the morning.
Yes.
It's way more responsible.
And this is more crazy.
You know who you're going to miss in the second half? Well, Eric Zorn will be here in a half an hour, so you'll get to talk with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune.
Okay, good.
But speaking of newspapers, Mike Royko's son, David Royko, will be here. There's a book being written about his dad, who's, I think most newspaper people in the city will agree, probably the most influential columnist the city has ever seen.
Easily. One
Don't
of the most
think?
Iconic columnists. We used to read his, I was on the speech team in high school,
yeah.
And we would read Mike Royko, Bob Green, all the columns, you know, for practice. It was cool.
Yeah.
I love Mike Royko.
He wrote for both the Tribune and the Sun-Times at different times. And was he also a columnist for the Daily News for a little bit, or am I imagining that?
He might have been.
He was amazing, and there is a book being written by his son, and he'll be by later on. David Royko will. All right. Give me your reaction to this.
Okay.
In New Jersey, there's a basketball team at a school called St. John's. The basketball team is made up of fifth graders. There's 11. I know this sounds like a math problem the way I'm presenting it. It's
not
a math problem. It's an ethics situation. There are 11 kids on the basketball team. A couple of them are girls. They have mostly boys on this basketball team, but then they also have a couple of girls.
And so it's a co-ed team.
It is a co-ed team.
Okay, cool.
So they're about to start their season over there in New Jersey, and then somebody from another team reads the rules of basketball in New Jersey, for kids anyway.
Yeah.
And they realize that it says right there in the bylaws of these basketball games of the league that the members of any team have to be either all boys or all girls. That's it. You can't have a co-ed team in this particular league.
Why, I wonder?
You know, they don't go into detail. I don't know why. I imagine it was just written years and years ago, and even though other teams have changed it a little bit, those were the bylaws years ago. So they call them out on it. They call the St. John's team out, and they say before their first game the other night, hey, here are the rules. It's all boys, or you don't play. You forfeit. Not just the game, but you forfeit the season. If you field a team that has boys and girls on it, your season is forfeited.
Wow.
So they decide that the equitable way to do this is to take a vote among the 11 team members, and it came out 11-0. The team decided we are a team, and that's the way we've practiced, and that's the way we play. And if you're not having the girls on the team, then we're out for the season.
So they forfeited their
season.
And it was unanimous.
Yeah.
You know what? That's incredible.
Isn't it?
I give all of those kids a round of applause. Number one, for sticking up for the girls, but number two, for being a team.
Right.
You know, because honestly, Bill, that's what being a team is all about.
Yeah.
You know, you win together, you lose together, you play together, and they've been playing together all season like this. Why
practicing.
Shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, practicing, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's wonderful, don't you?
I do. You know, I'm overly competitive. I really am. Wendy and I have discussed this because she's known me for years. And as soon as you put a bat in my hand or give me a basketball or a tennis racket or anything, I enjoy winning. I hate to say it, it's way more fun to win than it is to lose.
Right.
It really is.
Win big or go home.
That's it. But that said, if I was in this exact same situation, there's no way in the world I would play the game. I'd say this is unfair to everybody involved.
Right.
Why wouldn't we allow women to be on the team?
Especially because you've been practicing like that all season long. So many sports now are co-ed. My goddaughter is 5, and she plays on her brother's soccer team.
Yeah.
You know, they're little, of course, but everything that they're doing is co-ed. They did gymnastics together, soccer. The baseball is a little different because he's playing baseball and she wants to play softball.
Yeah.
You know, so that I could see is different. But there was even a local high school, too, and they had the kicker was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through kind of the same thing, and they, you know, had to bring it up before the board. I want to say it was Oak Park. And if it's not, forgive me, I'll look it up. But mm-hmm. I think that they did the same thing, and they had to change the rules so the girl could play. But the team was the same way. They said, hey, this is our kicker.
Yeah.
We don't care
doesn't
girl
matter
or
if
boy.
It's a boy.
This
or
is
girl.
Our kicker.
You know, here's what happens with both of my daughters as they started out playing sports. When you're younger, there is an equality issue that changes as you get older.
Yeah.
It really does. I know they've talked about it for several years. Could a woman play in the NFL or in the NBA or in Major League Baseball? And I think once you get to that level, it might be a little difficult mm-hmm. just because of weight distribution and muscle tone and things like that.
Right.
I'm not, even though I'm all for women playing whatever sport they want to play, I don't know if they'd fare as well in professional sports. But at this level,
No, I do agree.
Fifth grade level,
that. Yeah.
I'm positive a girl could play just as well as a boy could play.
I think so too, especially like you said at this level, and they've been practicing together the whole season.
Yeah.
Why not? I really commend these kids and their parents.
Yeah.
For how they were raised. I mean, think about that, because it wasn't 6-5. It was 11.
It was unanimous.
To nothing. It was unanimous.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
They showed. I saw this report last night, and they showed a bunch of the parents with tears in their eyes saying, we didn't prompt our son or we didn't prompt our daughter. We didn't pull them aside and say, look, it would make us all look so much better if you said, well, I'm not playing if the girls can't play. They all did it on their own. There's a very spontaneous moment where one of the parents says right before the game, hey, just to be clear on this, here's what it is. If we decide only the boys can play, then you guys go out there and play. But if you decide, then the season is forfeited. And there was no hesitation at all. Every one of the 11 kids' hands raised, we don't want to separate the team.
See, I think that's cool. And then I know at the bottom of the story, too, they started to chant unity, and then the whole crowd started cheering, too.
Isn't that nice?
And the parents were crying. Yeah. I just think, really, they're wearing unity games, hashtag unity games now, T-shirts.
That's excellent.
At the school, which I think is great. You know, I think they should – what they should have done – I know this team called them out, but maybe the coaches of the other team should have said, hey, these are the rules. They're a little antiquated. Maybe we should redo this. Or, you know, instead of just threatening them, maybe they could have gone to the school board or whatever they would need to do
right.
to amend the rules.
I wonder if there was a moment where the coaches aside, you know, the coach of the team that had both boys and girls and the other coach said, these rules are archaic. Let's ignore them. Are you on board with that? I've got a team here that wants to play.
Right.
Let's make our own rules. And, you know, I'd be all for that. I wonder what the other coach saw in this. Like, what would the gain be to say you can only field boys? I don't know what their reasoning was.
Maybe the St. John's team is really good. And they were threatened by the fact that they are such a good team.
Oh,
and
then
they went and looked in the rules and said, oh, wait a minute,
we
only
found
boys
something.
Can play. Yeah, and then without any reason, rhyme or reason, they just said, let's have the, you know, the team forfeit the season.
Maybe.
Or force them to forfeit.
That could be. Thoughts on this? We're at 312-981-7200 talking about this New Jersey team made up of fifth grade boys and girls who decided, instead of kicking the girls off the team, as the rules implied, they were just giving up the season. They forfeited the season. What do you think? Good move or not? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Andrea for Wendy on WGN. It's me, Bill, and then it's her, Andrea. She's in for Wendy. Wendy will probably stop by later. We're at 312-981-7200. We're telling you the story about a school in New Jersey, St. John's. They play CYO basketball. I'm not positive what that is, but they do play in a CYO basketball league.
Choose your own. No, I don't know.
I don't know what that I don't know what that refers to.
Catholic,
and it doesn't
maybe
say
it's Catholic Youth Organization.
Oh, I bet it is.
Maybe because it's
Kevin.
John's?
Do we have a prize for Andrea?
Do I get a pizza or an
app? Do you want a Lou Malnati's? Gift card? What do you want?
Can I have both?
Maybe a revenge is what is it? Payback is a Wendy shirt. We can
you want
one of those?
A payback is a Wendy T-shirt.
Oh, I'll do a Wendy T-shirt.
Have you won anything from WGN in the past 90 days?
No.
Okay.
Do you count these little candy hearts that Cochran gave me?
You get those. All right. So, what are your thoughts on this? You have a team of kids, boys and girls, 11 of them to be exact, who are given the choice right before their first basketball game. You can keep the girls on the team if you want, but if you do, you forfeit your entire season. Doesn't seem fair. Mm-mm. Or you can remain as a team. What do you want to do? Well, the vote happened, and it was 11-0. They decided to forfeit their whole season instead of dump the girls on the team. Good for them. What are your thoughts? 312-981-7200. Garrett, we'll start with you. What do you make of all this, Garrett?
I think it's a very noble decision by the grade school team. I want to point out one thing, though. Recently in the IHSA football playoffs, there was a clear error by one of the officials, which gave the football team that won the game, they shouldn't have won.
Mm-hmm.
What they should have done, the coach and the players should have said, hey, you guys made a mistake. We're going to award our football slot to the team that should have won.
Oh.
Because people would have remembered that decision forever. Probably would have made Sports Illustrated and stuff like that.
Right.
What's fair is fair and stuff like that. But I think it's a really noble decision, and those kids should be rewarded.
I agree with you.
I credit their parents and their teachers for that. So
yeah.
That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Garrett.
Completely
appreciate it.
Thanks, Garrett.
Have a good day.
By the way, instead of Lou Malnati's, try the best pizza in the world. What go out to Armand's in Elmhurst.
Is that good pizza, Armand's? All right. You talked us into it. We'll go now.
It's just as good as the original one at Grand in Harlem.
All right.
Elmwood Park.
Thanks, Garrett. That's Garrett representing Armand's Pizza.
That Casey was talking about, it was when Fenwick, this was just last fall, right, Bill? It was Fenwick and Plainfield North, and they took the case to court.
Did they really?
Yeah, because it was a controversial call, a controversial finish to the Class 7A semifinal football game. So it was like a big thing. They went to court over it. But, I mean, I'm not saying that they should have done that, but at least, you know, the coaches should have not backed this team into a corner.
Right.
Because I think the other team now really kind of ends up looking like the bad guy, don't you?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Let's get Sophie's idea on this. Sophie, you had something to add to this story, didn't you?
Yes. Am I there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
That's right.
I wanted to say two things. First of all, CYO, I believe, stands for Catholic Youth Organization.
I think Andrea got that right. Good, she just wanted a pizza.
You can share
that.
My pizza, Sophie.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you said that.
Oh, that's all right.
I'm in Springfield, and sometimes you guys cut out.
Oh, that's
she
okay.
Can have my pizza, because I don't think I'm going to be eligible for
you
it.
Malinati's?
Yeah, do you want one?
Yeah, I'll
all right. All right, before you hang up, stay on, and we'll get Kevin get you something. All right.
And let me just say the other thing real quickly is that I believe that if by saying they have to be all boys or all girls on the team, that sounds to me like discrimination, and that, I believe, is illegal under the Constitution.
If it isn't, it should be. Why would you disclude anybody, especially at this point?
Right.
They're fifth graders. I don't know why you'd leave anybody out.
And it's been set up. It seems to have been set up this way, don't you think? Because they practice together for the whole off season.
Right.
Yeah, and I think, would they say if you're gay or transgender, you can't play?
I don't think they could.
No.
I don't think they'd be able to.
Then why would you have to be, you know, if you want to have an all transgender team, that's all cool. That's cool and everything. But, you know, I still think that would be wrong as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that it would be unconstitutional. So basically, if it is unconstitutional, then the law in the league's books has to be struck down.
I would hope so.
They can't make them do that.
I bet.
That's what I think.
I think you're right, Sophie. And you know what, Bill? I bet this goes to court. I bet this isn't the last that we're going to see of this. Because it was noble and cool and they forfeited the season. But you can bet those coaches or maybe even the parents will say, let's have a judge decide this.
Yeah, go deeper.
Yeah.
How about the parents just say, let's get together and do the right thing and not waste all the money on the lawyers?
That'd be better. That'd be so much better. Sophie, stay on the line. Andrea, the pizza that Andrea just won, she is giving to you.
I'll buy you a pizza. Oh, yeah. I'll buy her a pizza.
All right. All right.
Stay. Yes, I listen to you guys every day. I listen to Andrea with Rokan, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you on with Rokan?
No, that's Anna.
Anna's on
with
Rokan.
Really good friends, and we're both Greek.
Oh,
so.
All right.
You guys are all really, you're really good.
Thank you, Sophie. You already won the pizza. You don't have to say nice things, but stay on the line. Kevin will talk to you, and we'll get you some, all right?
Thank you. All right. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
She's great.
Hold on. Do you remember a couple of years ago, what would this be, 7, 8 years ago, a pitcher was throwing a perfect game, and the umpire blew a call. And then afterwards, he felt so terrible. Like he said to the press, I messed up that guy's perfect game. That's on me. I made a total mistake. And he and the pitcher forgave him. I can't remember who it was in baseball, but the pitcher goes, hey, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Don't feel bad. Even though throwing a perfect game is like one of the rarest things in all of sports, this guy was good enough to say, look, you missed it. It happens. Let's move on.
I don't think I could move on. But it was a bad call. Did you remember, too? It was supposed to be a strike. It was supposed to be a strike, and it was right down the middle or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do remember. It wasn't Mill Pappas, right?
No, that was a whole separate. Okay. It was Mill Pappas. Hold on a second. Scott wants to throw something in as well. Scott, thanks for calling in. What do you think of this?
Hey, first things first, I think it was very noble of the team to stay together, and I think WGN should buy those bits and pizza.
All right, let's see what I can
I'll
do.
I'll buy the pizza, too,
Oh, it's
Bill.
On Andrea.
That sounds good.
Thank you.
But my question is, I understand you should have girls on, or they want girls on the team, but Bill, you made a comment that when they get older, perhaps their body structure and such won't allow them to play.
Right.
So if I'm a girl and I play grade school, middle school, high school, then college. At what point do you tell me I can't play? Well, I came up through the ranks just like everybody else. So where is the line drawn, which is why I think the lines are drawn at a younger age for boys and girls, soccer, football, et cetera. So where do you draw the line? And then you have to tell a girl, sorry, you can't play anymore?
You know, I think that's, you know, and I'm of the mindset, you know, I agree. Junior high, you have the girls' team, the boys' team. High school, you have the girls' tennis, boys' tennis, football. I get that.
Yeah.
And that makes perfect sense. But I think at this age, this is still a young enough age where they've been practicing together, they've been playing together, this is how it's been set up.
Yeah.
You know, when they take it to the next level, the high school level, yeah, absolutely. I think there already are separate teams.
But not in fifth grade.
But I think, yeah, it's fifth grade. It's a younger group that you're dealing with, don't you think? I mean, I
do think.
I don't think there's you make that separation yet.
But Scott, it's a
so
good.
You're basically saying it's not really boys and girls. It's an age thing that you should be changing the rules. The age is not really boys and girls. It should be the ages of when you can play co-ed sports.
I think so, yeah, because look at now. I mean, like I said, my godchildren, they all play on the same soccer team. It's
right.
Boys and girls. Mainly
and
because,
what age are they?
And they're 5 and 6 now. They're
probably, wouldn't you agree, it's probably right around maybe high school level where it becomes an issue of just the size of the players. That's where it starts to play in, right around age 14, 15 probably,
I think so.
Scott, are you happy with that?
Oh, I'm happy with the whole thing. I'm just saying there are lines to be drawn. And
sure.
It's not win or lose. It's just these are the rules. So there are lines that are drawn. And again, I think what those kids did was very admirable, and that's something that's going to stay with them, even though they, quote-unquote, have a losing season.
Yeah.
They definitely made the right choice for them. But that's why rules are in place, and that's why we follow the rules. And if you want to change the rules, they need to negotiate changing the rules, which is no problem.
No, right.
But you have to negotiate those rules.
Exactly.
Well, I appreciate it. Scott, thanks for the call. Have a good day.
I hope they appreciate the pizza, okay?
I hope they do. I know they will.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
I'm
going to
be sending these kids pizza, aren't I?
Let's quickly, our friend Dave Ennett is in the WGN sports department right now. And Dave, you probably know this better than I do. Do you remember the story with the pitcher who had a perfect game going?
Yeah,
who was that?
And you'll remember the name as soon as I say it. Armando Galarraga.
It was.
Of the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
And the umpire, Jim Joyce, was at first base, and it would have been the 27th and final out, ground ball. He called the batter safe, and Galarraga then got the next guy out and settled for a one-hitter.
Yeah.
But, Joyce admitted, he said he thought he had the call right, and then he saw the replay and he realized he blew it.
It was a blown call at first base.
Yes.
Right. Wow. And didn't they get together the next day? Didn't he come out and talk to him and said, hey, all is forgiven?
They
don't
worry about it. Galarraga forgave him right away.
Yeah.
Now, there were others who were not quite as forgiving. And Joyce said at the time that his family got threats. He got threats.
Right.
He was very emotional about it. He felt terrible about it. But Galarraga said, look, the guy's human. He made a mistake.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Isn't that something?
I mean, the thing is that Galarraga, that's kind of what he's best known for, is kind of like
being forgiving.
Kind of like Milt Pappas being so close to a perfect game. And then,
but Milt didn't handle it quite as amicably.
No, I think Milt was a little more upset.
Slightly
not quite
upset.
As forgiving.
Right.
I think I would be pretty upset.
Oh, yeah. It's so rare.
My perfect game.
I know. Dave, thank you. Appreciate
You're welcome.
It. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got news coming your way next, and then Eric Zorn stops by. It's Bill and Andrea in for Wendy on WGN. Commercials are coming, I promise.
I thought you guys were going to me. I was getting nervous.
No. We're trying to find the commercials. Here they are.
Vehicles every day, including should we go to Kim?
Hey, want to go to me?
By the way, can I give a Bozo quote here? Bozo always said it's more important. It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice.
Oh, he's right. And then he said, that's not in the quote, but I know he used to say that from time to time.
See, wasn't it better than the commercial?
That was way better than the commercial. Can you sponsor the news?
Kim, I'll sponsor you, and I'll buy you a pizza, too.
Oh, how nice.
Wait, Kim, don't do the news yet. We have found the commercials, okay, everybody. Good. Don't panic, and then Kim has the news. It's Bill and Andrea on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric, we do sing your praises, and with good reason.
Thank you.
You're very talented. A couple of things I need to ask you. Number one, I'm looking at some of the topics that you want to discuss today, and I don't see the word Donald or Trump anywhere on the sheet. Is everything all right?
Well, I'm sort of exhausted by that. I know. We can certainly talk about it.
No, there's other things to discuss.
I'll come back this afternoon. We'll go 2 more hours.
But usually, his name is featured prominently, not today.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about the Skyway, and let's do just that. What are your thoughts?
Well, here's the thing. This got a ton of response in the paper and also on Facebook when I posted it. I drive back and forth to Ann Arbor. My folks are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I go there, been there well over 100 times since I've lived here. And every time I just take the Skyway, and for listeners who don't know, the Skyway is basically a shortcut. Cuts 5 miles off the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cuts the corner around Indiana a little bit more tight than mm-hmm. the Bishop Ford to the Borman.
Right.
It's I-94, essentially. Always taking it. And this last time I was going, it was a week ago, and I looked at Waze. I use this traffic app, Waze.
Love
you ever
Waze.
Use that?
Yeah, Waze
you
is great.
Waze. And
love
so
Waze.
I looked at it, and it gives you...
But for people who don't know, because I've heard of it, but I'm not positive, it just gives you quicker routes.
It's spelled Waze. It's a free app, and you put in your destination, and it basically tells you which way. It's like every mapping app. The thing I like about it is it's turn-by-turn directions.
Yeah.
And
it'll literally take you down an alley. I mean, it takes you on the fastest way, and I think it's pretty up to date with if there's a traffic jam or
it's crowdsourced
crash.
Sort of, so like all the Waze users are all plugged into the satellite so that they can see how fast traffic is moving.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great app. I really like it. And but Andre's right, you'll go, it'll say like, I want to go to work. They go, well, go down this and then go down and cut down this alley.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go down this one way street and turn left at the rock that looks like a bear and bear that looks like a rock. but the thing about it is that it'll often do that to save you 1 minute.
So
every time when I drive in the morning, sometimes it'll tell me, like, get off at California, go over here, go here. And I'll say, well, give me alternate routes.
Yeah.
And it'll say, well, if you just take the Kennedy in, you'll get there 2 minutes later.
It also shows you, like, the red light cameras and if there's,
that's valuable.
Police car.
Potholes and everything. Yeah.
Really? Accidents. Oh, I didn't know that.
It's pretty good. Swift. I thought, well, I was driving by myself. I thought, I'll just check and see how much time it will save me to take the Skyway over taking the I-94. And it was 4 minutes. And the toll on the Skyway, first of all, the Skyway toll itself is $5. And then if you have a transponder, an iPass or an EasyPass, if you're in Indiana, it's about another 50 cents on the Indiana toll road until you sort of cut back over and get on the I distinguish it, the freeway and the Skyway. And I posted this, and I was upbraided by a number of readers saying, we don't say freeway in Illinois. We say expressway.
Oh,
right.
Sorry.
Excuse me. But yeah, I was trying to...
That's more of a West Coast thing,
right?
Yeah.
I was trying to make the distinction between a road that you pay to ride on.
Right.
One that's free and one that's not.
Right.
So I was thinking, well, 4 minutes for $5.50 for me. And it's,
is that worth the trade-off?
If you don't have a transponder, I think it's $7.60 or something like that. It's a little bit more. But so I thought, well, $5 for 4 minutes. Do I really, my time on a Saturday afternoon worth a dollar a minute, basically? It's like, nah. So I decided I'd take the, for the first time in like forever, I decided I'd just take 94. And then I began thinking about this, like, why have I been taking the Skyway all these years? And is my time that valuable? And then I started checking the app in various ways and seeing during the week to see how much time it saves. And it's usually about 4 or 5 minutes to take the Skyway. And sometimes it's more because the traffic builds up. But
yeah.
But so I just sort of put this out to readers saying, well, I decided to take the regular road, save myself some
right.
money. And a lot of response to it. A lot of people, and I, well, I have a poll. Maybe we can talk about the results of it a little bit later.
But, all right.
So I asked Rita, so do you take the Skyway? And if, and when you're considering, how much time would it have to save you in order to spend the money? So a lot of interesting responses on that. A lot of, and I'll just give you some sort of four things that people think about. Or, well, one of them is that time savings can vary with the time of day.
Well, so without a doubt. Rush hour. Yeah. And I'm sure this is among the poll, but that stretch of roadway in Indiana seems to always be under construction as well, so it's very unpredictable.
Well, but if you have an app, it'll tell you.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
But the other thing people say, the Skyway is prettier. It's a prettier drive.
Would you describe it as pretty, though?
I would describe it as comparatively pretty.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Fewer plastic bags on the side of the road.
You get to see the lake.
You do, but it's dotted with factories and stuff. It's not
the... That's America at work, Bill.
I guess it is. Yeah. But I want my views of the water to be unobstructed by towers of smoke and factories.
Well, you know,
and former steel mills.
I will grant that it's prettier, because you know the I-94. It is how many lanes wide is it when it becomes the Borman? There is it like it feels like it's 16
it is.
Lanes
yeah.
wide. It's right. just huge. It's like when you're driving the Dan Ryan in. The other thing that people say point out, which I think is also true, which is that the I-94, the freeway, is scarier. That is a scary drive. It is
scary
like
in what
a lot
respect?
Of trucks.
Yeah,
and I find that the variation in speed between the various drivers is greater on
right.
that road. So you're like people are zipping in and out of you, and trucks are bearing down on you. I think it is varsity level driving.
People have talked about that bridge, the bridge that's on the Skyway, as being very imposing. Is it? It isn't
the
to me.
The steel bridge.
Yeah, just the pitch of it for some reason. Is off-putting to some people, but I don't notice anything different.
Is this like a phobic thing you're talking about?
I guess
like,
so.
You look at the bridge and go, ooh.
It is big.
Like, yeah, I
it
guess.
Is
like you're a billy goat about to cross it.
I guess so.
Popping out.
Yeah.
Answer me these questions.
No, but I've talked to people over the years who go, I hate it because that bridge is just so ominous and frightening. But to me, it's not.
You're way up high, I guess.
Yeah.
I've
been on way scarier bridges.
Now you've mentioned it, I probably will never be able to go across it again.
There's, I don't know if the configuration is like this now, but, you know, they're working on that area that's right by McCormick Place, right before you get on the Dan Ryan. If you're coming from the city and you're heading southwest.
Right, right in Bronzeville.
Right. So for a while, and it may still be that way, I'll find out tomorrow when we go to Glenwood for the Hometown Voices tour. It's down to one lane, and it's so narrow on both sides that if you have any kind of claustrophobic fears when you're driving... It just seems like I'm not positive my car is going to make it through this one lane. It's that tight.
Yeah, and there's a weird red light, too, now under the bridge.
Yes.
And you don't know if you should go or wait. Right. It's just it's a big traffic, you know, snarl right now there.
You're sparking some anxiety today.
I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to. All right,
let's talk about my poll results, but you want to
can
do
we
that?
Yeah, we'll take a quick break and then I'm anxious to find out what your readers are saying. Is it worth roughly $1 a minute to save time by taking a tollway as opposed to I got to say freeway.
The freeway, you got to say it.
Got to say it. You let us know. We're 312-981-7200. We'll find out the results to Eric's poll next. It's Bill and Andre in for Wendy on WGN. All right, it's Bill Leff, and it's Andrea Darlis. Andrea is sitting in for Wendy. Eric Zorn joins us, as he does every Monday, to talk about whatever's on his mind. And today, it's the Skyway, the Indiana Skyway. It's $5.
It's the Chicago Skyway.
We
haven't sold it to Indiana yet. We sold it to Canada, but we didn't sell it to Indiana.
I'm making a deal under the table as we speak.
Yeah.
I want to have that fixed.
And I get chastised for saying freeway, and he says the
I know, Skyway. Poor Eric off the air. I said, you got to say expressway.
You have to say expressway.
But you were just trying to show the difference between the free and the, you know.
I like that you pay tolls in both states within about a minute and a half of each other. That seems fair, doesn't it?
Why do we still have tolls? I mean, weren't they supposed to be paid for in, what, 1973?
Yes.
That was the whole point of the toll system, right?
They said it was supposed to pay for itself.
And then it'll be free, yeah.
Right. Well, the reason the toll still exists is because we needed a balanced budget, and the tolls paid for that, and everybody's happy.
And now we have a balanced budget.
Yeah, everything's happy.
Bill, we don't have a balance. What? We don't have a balanced budget.
That's not true, is it?
What? Right? We've been paying tolls all
of course,
years.
We keep paying tolls.
We sold the Skyway, so we wouldn't have to...
Right, it's all fixed.
Off
come on.
Thank goodness.
All right,
anyway,
so what were the findings?
Well, let me set this up again, which is that, you know, I was going home, and I wanted to say, you know, do I spend the $5 to save... It was about 4 minutes. It's about 5 miles, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you got to stop for various things, but And I decided that I was going to, for the first time in as long as I can remember, I'll just take the expressway, the free route rather than the Skyway. Mm-hmm. Right. So I got tons of responses to this from readers just on Facebook and online. And so I put a click poll up. You know, those are very scientific.
Yes.
And I just asked people, I just asked two questions. One was, when driving from Chicago area into Michigan, or central Indiana, mm-hmm. And back, do you usually take the Skyway or the freeway, the 94? And 55% of people say they take the Skyway.
Oh, more people pay.
People will pay.
Okay. Right.
So then I asked a question. I said, the Skyway route is about 5 miles shorter and about $5.50 in tolls. Now, before I get to the result of this, people contacted me and said, what you forget is that you didn't factor in the gas, how much it costs extra to drive 5 miles of gas.
Right.
Which I did kind of, that's why I came up with the $5. I feel like it's $5 to take the Skyway because it's about 50 cents in gas, depending on the kind of car you have. But people wrote to me and said, well, you know, the IRS allows you to take about 50 cents per mile operating costs off your car, so that's how you should figure the 5 miles. But
they're a little tricky on
that.
It's
a little tricky. And also, I think some of that stuff is like insurance costs
that are
fixed. So it's the cost of operating a car, but it's not a cost that you could get back incrementally by saving 5 miles at a time. Anyway, I mean, just wanted to point out that this is an approximation. Is it worth it to you? And I said, how much time would you have to save in order to choose the Skyway? And the number one answer was, I don't even care if the freeway is slightly faster. The Skyway is a better experience, and it's worth the money. And that was a third of the respondents said that.
Wow.
So far, the poll's still open, but these are a lot of responses, so they don't tend to change that much. And then the other end, I don't care how much longer the freeway takes. The man is never going to get my money.
Oh, there you go.
And that was just 13%.
I think that would kind of be my way.
Yeah, me
I'm
too,
not
going to
pay
I'm
for
not
it. I'll
pay this. I will sit in a Borman for hours.
I have gone to Bed Bath & Beyond, and I have forgot my 20% off coupon.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, what am I saving? You know, $4. I will go home, get my coupon, drive back the next day with the coupon and my receipt to get the $4 credit. And they're like, are you nuts?
This is a woman after my own heart. I tell you what.
I mean, really.
But you know you're just kind of breaking even with your time and the gasoline.
Oh, yeah, the gas money.
Not even close.
Right.
You're probably losing on
it. It's not even worth it. But yeah, I would do
that. But it's that feeling, right? I have saved money.
Yes. It's like I want to use a coupon. I save money.
Yeah. Haven't they toyed?
It's irrational.
Well, slightly irrational. That's right. Haven't they toyed with the idea in Illinois of putting a lane on expressways where you'd have a card and you would pay extra to use essentially an express lane?
Yeah, they're toying with that on the Eisenhower, right? They're going to have, well, I don't know if it's a special, is it a special toll lane or is it a high occupancy vehicle lane?
It would be
lane?
A special lane, almost like the carpool lane,
right,
if you will. But yeah,
the rich person lane.
Exactly.
They should call it the rich guy lane.
Well, that's kind of what the Skyway is, $5 per mile. I think it's the most expensive road because the Skyway itself is a fairly short.
Instead of arrows or the diamond for the bus lanes, there's
just dollar signs. Yeah. And the guy from the Monopoly game, the picture of him.
Rich Uncle Punnybags.
Yeah. Yeah. Thurston Howell, and you have to speak through clenched teeth. There it is.
Here's where it's come into play for me. A couple of times I have visited amusement parks that offer a special ticket where and it's not like the Disney Fast Pass where everyone has access to it, but at Universal Studios, I'm trying to remember where else. I know they had it at Universal Studios a few years ago when I was there. You could essentially buy what I call the rich person ticket, and you don't have to wait in line. It's like $100 extra on top of your regular admittance fee to get into the park. But you say to yourself, boy, I'm going to spend most of the day just plain standing in line.
Sure.
If I had the money, why wouldn't I spend it to not wait in lines and go on as many rides as I want all day?
Well, it's the whole, isn't it a version of the whole first class?
Yes.
Dilemma, which is, you know, if you've got the money and it doesn't matter to you, why not take first class?
Yeah.
Now, I'd never take first class.
Right.
Partly because of the Andrea Darlis effect, because I'm now going to call it, which is like, really, I could, that extra $80 I could use to.
I could use it on a tour.
Yeah.
But is that
a meal?
But is that fair that you should be rewarded just simply because you have the money? Does that seem
welcome
fair?
Welcome to America. Well, this is where people are rewarded for having.
But there's never a reverse of that. I can never think of a time where you're treated better because you don't have the money to buy a little extra option like that.
If you're, you know, I think, Eric, if you were saving 30 minutes, Absolutely. I would think the results would be higher, but I'm surprised that they are what they are because mm-hmm. what did you say you saved?
Well,
a minute and a half?
No, 4 minutes.
4 minutes. What I say. Okay.
But the most common response aside from that was at least 20 minutes. If the Skyway saved 20 minutes, 20% of the people said they would take it. So that's like, it's not, I wouldn't. So, you know, you basically have people saying like, well, I'm not going to, I'll take it under certain conditions. Right. There's only like a third of people say, I'll always take the Skyway. I don't care what.
Yeah.
Thing. But most people, they have a limit. And then there's also the question, which can figure into this, which is if you've got four people in the car, all of a sudden you're not just saving 4 minutes. So you've got 16 minutes.
Right.
Four times four. So is that suddenly you're thinking I'm going to be wasting 16 person minutes. It's a complicated problem, which is, I think, why it got people kind of engaged.
I don't think I'd be influenced by anything if the only savings is 4 or 5 minutes. I can see the 20 to 30 range. Yeah. That makes sense because that adds up over time. But just over 5 minutes, I mean, think about your average day of driving a car, one or two red lights, there's your 4 or 5 minutes right there.
But don't you find it at times there's some kinds of driving where you're not that worried about when you're going to get there?
Right.
You're just like, because being in the car, you can listen to WGN.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
that's
sure.
true.
You can listen to Bill and Wendy podcast.
Yes.
Or Bill and Andrea.
That's what we suggest.
Yeah. And those red lights at 4 a.m. are optional, I thought.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it saves you a lot of time.
You know, I see these women outside the studio with selfie sticks.
Yes.
And the people, this is probably too late to bring up something brand new, but I don't see anything wrong with selfie sticks.
I agree with you.
I like them. I think they take good pictures. I don't have one, but I see no problem with selfie sticks. People are like always, you know, these are narcissistic. Well, God, so what?
I think they're okay too. But you know what? I've been shamed. I have one, and it's at my house.
Yeah.
I used to carry it with me just for that reason.
You would always have it on you?
What?
Really, would you?
Are you judging
me? No.
No, of course I wouldn't, Bill.
No, never.
Yeah, I would carry it. Now I just leave it home because I've been shamed.
Andre and I could never do this because we would just agree on everything.
Right, that would never work.
I can't have being here
anymore.
Eric, we can discuss this for another 4 minutes, but that will cost you $5. It's up to you. I'm okay either way.
Absolutely not.
No, why would you spend an
extra? I'll buy him a pizza.
Would you?
All
right. That's very, very kind of you.
I'm buying everybody a pizza.
Little Caesar's pizzas, those $5 pizzas.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
We have something to give away since we're in a very generous mood. Eric, first of all, thank you. Always appreciate your input. Eric Zorn, read him in the Chicago Tribune.
Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder taking the day off today. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
I got confused.
Hold
I thought on. Our schedule changed and we just do 1 to 3.
No. In a month. We still have a month.
And then we do 1 to 3?
Well, we do 10 to noon here on regular traditional radio.
Terrestrial radio.
Yeah. And then we just go to people's houses for an hour. And if they want us to do the show at their houses, we would be happy to oblige.
You know, you say that jokingly, but I'm seeing a campaign to start that up where we do that.
They might do that. A quick happy birthday to you. We just had a nice birthday celebration for you in the green room.
Happy birthday, Wendy.
Happy birthday to you, Wendy. Happy anniversary to Kim Gordon.
Wait, can I just tell you that Kim Gordon put something on my Facebook page that said, happy birthday, Wendy. Oh, and happy anniversary.
I got to cover all my bases. You guys are always so kind to me.
That's so nice.
Yes, there was a wonderful Walking Dead cake with a decrepit hand.
Very eerie.
Holding a candle like a cigarette, which kind of cracked me up. And it was, everyone was down there singing happy birthday. So thank you very much. It
really
was
absolutely.
Yesterday.
Really cool. Are you guys going to post a picture of that? Because it was a pretty cool cake.
Yeah, Stephanie took a picture of it because now it's been devoured.
What was it?
It's it was
yellow cake with buttercream in the middle.
Yes. And fondant, because you love fondant.
I'm not very fond of fondant.
What?
I got to be honest with you.
The word fondant is right in it.
I'm scared to eat it.
Which it's sugar, isn't it?
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's like Play-Doh, kind
of. It is like Play-Doh. It's the consistency of Play-Doh.
But because of all the shows with chefs that make cakes that look like anything, now every bakery has that. They incorporate that. Not every bakery, but a lot of bakeries do to incorporate it into the presentation of the cake. That was the eeriest birthday cake I've ever seen.
It was really cool. We'll post a picture of it. Stephanie took some pictures.
Your actual birthday was yesterday.
Yes.
And you did something special, I'm guessing.
I had like a whole pretty good weekend. We're getting our basement finished and our bedroom remodeled. So poor Jimmy Mack had to clean out everything. And I kept going, it's my birthday weekend.
Mm-hmm. Play that up.
He's like, all right.
That.
So he did everything.
That was nice. And you just lounged around.
I did. I watched funny shows with the boys. Some Goldberg, some Real O'Neills. Mm-hmm. Caught up on Baskets.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Red Lobster last night, one of my favorite places.
For the seafood lover in you.
Yes. And I got a lovely gift. I wanted this hair thing from Jim. It's called Volume, and it's supposed to give you more volume. And I sent him the link, and it hasn't arrived yet, but I'm looking very forward to getting mm-hmm. it. And something that I can't believe I didn't fall for, Dylan, my youngest son, says, Mom, where do you get your nails done?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Magic Nails.
Seems like a question a young boy would ask his mom.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I didn't fall for it at all. I just went, why? And I answered. And then he goes, what did you say? Because I really wasn't listening when you answered. So I said it again. And lo and behold, the boys gave me a gift certificate for my no chip.
They must love you.
They do.
I'm sure they do.
It was lovely. And that was it. I had a great weekend. I had a doctor's appointment this morning, and now I'm here. But I was confused on the schedule. But
we'll post the x-rays on our Facebook page.
Sure.
People want to see that.
No.
Everybody loves that. It's behind the scenes. It's fun.
No, it's not that fun. It's funny because you gave me this awesome book that I couldn't wait to read over the weekend, and
yeah.
I really didn't have that much time. I did help Jim a little bit cleaning up.
That was nice of you to do.
Because Frank Fontana is doing all of our remodeling, and I'm telling you, it's way easier than I thought. It's just when you remove everything from your bedroom,
mm-hmm.
there's nowhere to put stuff.
Yeah, that. Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
I didn't think of that.
Where did you end up putting everything?
It's all in the family room.
Oh,
piles of clothing.
Oh,
some dressers, some file cabinets. It's just kind of
you
mayhem.
You gonna have a garage sale?
No.
No.
Why?
I bet it sounds like there could be some valuables in there.
Not to sell.
Nothing. Just family heirlooms, things you've had for a long time.
I got a bunch of Goodwill bags together. So.
All right.
But it's been a productive and crazy weekend. I realized that my driver's license expired on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
So Friday when I was leaving here, I thought, you know, I really should go get it taken care of because they're not open and
on Sundays,
and I needed a vision test.
Uh-huh.
When does yours expire?
I just renewed mine a year or so ago, so I'm good for a few more years.
Is it
every 4 years or every...
I think it's every 4 years, but I mean, I've been able to do it online because I don't have any accidents
mm-hmm.
and no speeding tickets, but now they needed a vision test, and I didn't do that great on it.
Oh, no.
She gave me a bunch of times.
So what happens now?
Nothing.
Are you
I don't have
a license?
Restrictions. No, I got everything done, but...
you don't have to wear any kind of glasses mm-mm. when you're driving?
Nope. They did one eye for far and one for close. So when you have to do one eye and then the other, it's... But they work together miraculously.
Yeah, I bet. I can imagine. My fear was going in because the only time I need glasses is when I'm reading something
mm-hmm.
close up. When I'm driving, my vision is fine, but the test they give you, I'm assuming you got the same test. You look in like a viewmaster.
Yeah, and you got to push your head against it so hard I had like a big red welt on my my head,
right.
Which didn't look good on the picture. Did you have to get your picture redone?
I did.
I don't like my picture.
They'll redo it. Won't they redo it?
I'm not going back
you want
for
start
that.
With it? Get a photographer to do it. Get a professional photographer.
That's what Jim said.
Get Mapplethorpe.
Can't you bring a photographer with you?
Right. Right.
But that I walked.
This is Ann Getty's. It'd be you dressed
up,
as a baby,
please.
Holding up a rose. This is the most awkward birthday picture we've ever, driver's license picture we've ever taken.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because I did something that I never do. I walked to the State of Illinois
from
building.
Here to the State of Illinois building.
Yes,
good for
I
you.
Did. And you want to hear something really weird?
Huh?
I walked back.
All in one day.
I had like 9,000 steps on my thing.
That's impressive.
That's about...
It's a year's worth of walking for you.
It's about 8,200 more than I usually get.
For people who don't know, our office is about 10 feet away from the studio, and Wendy, on most days, will take an Uber from the studio to our office.
I just thought you'd be... Because I thought you'd be surprised that
I'm
walked...
Shocked.
I was going to take a cab back.
No, you already established you can do it.
I know, but I didn't have really good walking shoes on, so my feet were really starting to... I had heels on.
Yeah.
And I wasn't planning on doing it. And a couple times I stopped to wave a cab down, and they ignored me. I will not be ignored.
Why did they ignore you?
I don't know, because obviously they had a fare in there. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go stop at a Starbucks, get some caffeine in me.
Mm-hmm.
Over 9,000 steps in one day. That's about, honestly, about 8,600 more than I get in a year. So, all in one day.
Wow, that's incredibly impressive.
I feel vigorous.
You should. Well, yeah, I don't doubt that. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. If you want to jump in for any reason, you know how to do it. It's 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Wendy, I should tell you this. I was very much influenced by last night's Grammy Awards, so starting tomorrow, after seeing CeeLo Green, I'm going to start dressing like a gold robot. Does that disturb you at all?
No, I'll just call you 3PO.
That's fine. I don't care.
I'll come in a little garbage can and make beep-boo, beep-boo, beep-boo noises.
That's all right.
If I can be your R2 to your C-3PO.
That would be fantastic. I'm not sure what his thought process was. He got a lot of attention, and he's still getting a lot of attention today. For those of you who didn't see CeeLo Green, very talented man, by the way.
CeeLo Gold, he should have changed his name.
Right. He was dressed like a golden robot.
Yeah, I didn't watch the Grammys.
Oh, you didn't? I'm very surprised.
Although I heard you earlier, as I was driving to my appointment this morning, that you don't like to see musicians perform, which is really bizarre.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what to do. Like almost any other art form, I can sit and watch. But with musicians, for some reason, I don't know what it is. I don't know what to do.
Enjoy it?
But to me, because I love music, but I love it...
On a record?
In the background.
You don't want anyone watching.
No, I want people to watch it if they enjoy watching it.
Well, he's scared that he might bop his head shake his hips a little bit, and he doesn't want people to see that. I've seen you in the studio with people, and you're kind of jamming.
Yeah, sometimes it will move me a little bit, but to just
like, out of the room.
I don't know what it is. I should be able to just sit and watch it, but it doesn't work for me that way for some reason.
Kevin, did you have any comment on that? Because when I heard him say that, I didn't really understand.
I don't think I caught that actually. That's
Kevin. For people who don't know, is in a band. You know the band Fade with it's F A A A A D E.
Yes.
Kevin's in that band.
We're locally big. It's
locally big.
Yeah.
And Kevin has invited us to come and see, but I wouldn't know what to do.
Enjoy it.
What is there to do?
Grab yourself a beverage, sit back, relax.
I heard that, and I can't get it out of my mind.
I don't have it in me to just sit and watch music.
You need the music in you.
I wish it were easier.
it's not hard.
You mean than sitting there and listening?
He doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Is that it?
I feel like I should be doing something else while the music is on.
You could do like an interpretive dance, maybe. That'd be good.
I don't know if that's in anyone's best interest.
But now you're thinking of going to see Billy Joel.
Yeah.
But you'd do that? Because that's really nothing to watch. You can watch him play piano, which is what you would do.
Right.
But you just kind of smile and you just
oh, this
eat
song.
It up.
Oh, I've heard this song.
You sing along a little bit.
No, I don't do that.
You are, honestly.
The last time I saw Billy Joel, I got a cease and desist order.
It's one of
during
those.
Piano Man.
Excuse me, would you mind sitting? Could we sit down?
Right.
Would you?
Billy asked that you please not sing during his presentation.
What's the opposite of Captain Fun? Because that's you. First-hand
there is no
lame-o.
Opposite of Captain Fun.
I want it
to work.
Then let it work.
All right, listen to this. When I was doing stand-up, there was a club in Minneapolis that I was working at. And the deal was they did comedy, and then right after the comedy show was over, 20 minutes later, they did all different forms of music. It was a different kind every night. It was jazz one night. It was rock one night. You name it, they had it covered. And they'd say to us, you guys, you know, stay and watch the music. And I'm like, all right.
I refuse.
I lasted 10 minutes every night. And I don't know why, because they were all good. Every one of them was good. I would just sit there, and I'm going, all right. I would be fidgety, like, I don't know what to do.
You got to let loose once in a while.
I guess.
I mean, if there's a guitar solo, you can watch them play and be in awe at how quickly their fingers move.
I am in awe of that, it doesn't last long.
Well, then you move to the drummer going, oh, my God, why does everybody make fun of drummers? That's what I always do when I'm watching them.
Right.
And then the bass player, which Kevin is one. I know I got to change what I...
Be careful.
It's like, look at that poor bass player in the back of the stage. No one's noticing him.
So underappreciated.
Always the least expressive. Kevin, do you make facial moves?
He moves. He gets into it.
Yeah, I think. I don't know.
Not a John Entwistle?
Come see for yourself there. I love John Entwistle.
Yeah? Yeah. Are you going to start a show at 2 in the afternoon? I'll be there.
Do a matinee show, Kev.
Starting March 13th, I guess I could.
Oh, yeah. All right.
All right. Then we'll do it.
That'll be fine.
I'm still busy.
Happy hour jams.
Let's start doing that.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
I'd go see more bands if I could go, you know, at 2 in the
midday.
Afternoon.
Yeah. All right.
But I heard you say that this morning, and I kind of get it, but I really don't get it.
Like on Saturday Night Live, almost every week, like sometimes there's people on there that I don't know who they are, so it's no big deal to me.
Almost every week it's like that for me.
It's getting to be more like that. But then sometimes there's people on that I really like, you know, and then I find myself either fast forwarding through it or going, boy, I have other things I need to do while they're on. And I know that's terrible because they're artists. I should be able to appreciate it. But if you gave me a CD and say, hey, play this in the background while you're driving or at home, I'd do that all day. I love that.
I do understand, like, I don't like live music recordings. Like, I like live music and I like to go to a show. I really do.
Yeah.
And I don't really do anything. Sometimes I bop my head. Sometimes I move a little bit. But sometimes you're seated and as Kevin said, you have a bevy and you just kind of enjoy the show and go, oh, my God, look at how good they are.
But does that last for 90 minutes? Can you do that for 90 minutes?
I just almost swore at you. Yes, it lasts.
Go ahead. It's your birthday. Swear away. For 90 minutes, you can just sit there and do that? I can't do it.
I'm not doing anything. I'm just enjoying it.
Yeah.
I just don't like to get like a CD of live music, except for REO. That's the one live CD or record that I like. But typically, I like studio versions of songs.
Me too.
But if I'm there live, there's nothing to do but take it in and enjoy it. Do you feel like you should be doing something? Maybe bring a broom and do
clean
some
up, tidy up.
Work.
I could do that.
Clean some of the tables off. I'm sure the wait staff would love you. And at SNL, when you're watching it, don't you typically sit on your couch to watch SNL?
Yeah, usually. Normally.
Okay, so why can't you just continue sitting on your couch to watch the musical?
I don't know. I have no idea. Always love the sound of it. There have been bands.
It's kind
of
funny to me, Bill, that you are a guy
so weird.
Who used to depend on people to go sit down and
right.
watch you on a stage.
Right, I know.
Have you considered a mosh pit, Bill? Maybe that's more your speed. I don't know.
So then you can do something.
Yeah, you're doing something. Then.
I would try that, sure.
Because sometimes, you know, when I first started out being an audience member at comedy shows,
yeah.
my girlfriend Carla Felicia at the Comedy Woman Lions,
yeah.
I would go with. And I was a bit of a heckler because
I thought,
not to her, but to other people, like when Bob Odenkirk was there, Jeff Carlin, I'd be like, you know, because they pause and they look at you and it's
but
like.
But that's not a time for you to heckle.
Yeah,
that's
but just... I learned that. But when I first went, I felt like you, like I needed to do something. Because just to sit there and watch, you know, because they look at you and they kind of
say. So when
say,
they ask a rhetorical question, you didn't recognize it as rhetorical. You thought,
ultimately,
I
eventually
that.
I did.
Oh, no.
I was young. I wasn't even 21 yet.
But that
was weirder to me.
Yeah.
To sit there. And then I got used to it. And now I love going to see live stand-ups.
Yeah.
But
when was the last time you went?
It's been a long time. Daryl Hammond might have been
at
Zany's
when
we were at another radio station. I don't go out that much at all to do anything.
Yeah.
But I find it funny you can't just lay back on your couch, watch SNL, and then when the music, Ed Sheeran comes on, he's not that good.
Oh, really? No, I like him a lot. I really do.
He was doing some cool, like, I mean, I think that song he chose last night was a little bland, but he was doing some cool, like, live looping stuff with that big pedal board he had. That's my speed. To me, that's entertaining to watch.
I think he's really good.
It's good. There's something that I've noticed, and maybe it's my 17-year-old son telling me, it's like no one has any soul anymore in their music.
You don't think he does?
Not in that performance.
No? You've seen him before, though.
Not live.
Oh.
Because I don't know what to do when I'm watching him. Because his hair bugs me.
Maybe you would have liked him better if you just had him on in the background when he didn't look.
Yeah, you see, in that case, maybe.
Almost, I can't tell you how many bands that I had never heard of, and my first exposure to them was on Saturday Night Live. Seriously.
Arcade Fire for
that's,
me.
That's at the top of the list. I never heard of them before. I'd heard of them.
Want to go with me to see them?
I have something that day. but like, I like them so much that I bought some of their downloads of their music, and in the car, when they come on, it gets cranked up because I love it. But if you said to me, I'll buy the tickets, go. Well, you just did say that to me. I go, yeah, I can't. I don't want
to. But you listen to the song and you like stand up and you clap along or you move a little bit and you just, it's like you're experiencing it. Mm-hmm. You can watch them up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whatever.
Doesn't sound like fun to me.
I can tell.
It just doesn't. I don't know why.
I'm playing next Friday, not this Friday, but the Friday after that. You want to come?
Well, all right.
What time is that, Kevin?
I think the show starts at 10:30.
At where is that, Kevin?
It's
where
at the Beat Kitchen.
Oh, I'm banned from the Beat Kitchen.
Oh, are you?
Let me in.
Moshing too hard?
Yep.
Can you watch a musical?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Yes.
I like you, but I don't understand you.
If there's,
don't you want to get up and dance?
No. On purpose? No.
Every time I go to a musical, I go, oh, my God, why wasn't I in theater in high school? I really love this. I want to get out of my seat and start dancing with them.
Mm-mm, that's never happened to me. Mm-mm. All right, we'll take a quick break and then solve more problems. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder, and we have a special guest in the studio,
Boy,
Bill.
Do we ever. A couple of special guests. Mike Royko was, hands down, the best columnist this city has ever seen. And you can ask any columnist who's written for the Tribune or the Sun-Times
right.
or the Daily News, and they'll all tell you Mike Royko was the guy. Now, a book about a side of Mike Royko that you probably are not familiar with, the love affair that he had with his wife, Carol. Here in studio with us right now is their child, David Royko, and Joby Cerny, who does the audio component of the book, Royko in Love. Guys, thanks for being here.
Our pleasure.
Yeah.
What I just said is something I imagine you've heard 1,000 times in your life, if not more. Your dad was the best that ever was when it came to being a columnist for a paper here.
Yeah, it was a different era. And the second half of the 20th century, there's nobody who could compare to him. And if you think about it, he wrote for 34 years, 5 days a week. That's just beyond belief. And
never seemed to be grasping for story ideas either.
No. And you know, for him, it was a job. You know, he felt like, just like any other working man, he got up every day and he did the job. But the problem was, or the difference was with him, he was a genius. I mean, yeah. he was a great writer, he was a great thinker, but he had a work ethic that is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And the work ethic, we don't see a lot of that. I know millennials get blasted for things, but really, your father did work so hard. I can't imagine all those columns and still coming up with things day after day.
Yeah. He never let it down. And in fact, and the funny thing is, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of the last column he wrote. Mm-hmm. And he always hated the idea of, he hated columnists' last columns, farewell columns. He just thought they were sappy. And he always said, when he writes his last column, he's just going to write a column, and the last line is going to be, oh, by the way, this is my last column. Thanks, but nice. The thing was, though, he wrote a column, then he went to Florida for a vacation, and that's where he had the aneurysm that killed him. And so he, in a way, I mean, he got what he wanted. He didn't know that he was writing his last column when he wrote the column. And that's going to be 20 years next month, actually.
Wow.
Remind me, I know he wrote for the Sun-Times, and I know he wrote for the Tribune at different times, of course. Did he also write for any of the other papers here in town?
Well, yeah, the love of his life, newspaper wise, was the Chicago Daily News.
It was,
and he started there in 1959 as a reporter, and started the column there in 1963.
Yeah,
and he was there until the paper folded in 1978, and then he went naturally to the Sun Times. They were owned by the same by Marshall Field. And then when Rupert Murdoch bought the Sun-Times in 1983, my father said, I'll never write for a Rupert Murdoch rag. And his famous statement was, no self-respecting fish would be wrapped in a Rupert Murdoch rag.
Wow. Not a fan, huh?
And he walked across the street to the Tribune. And the Tribune had been trying to get him forever.
I'm sure.
And all of a sudden, he just, you know, thanks to Rupert Murdoch, Dad fell in the lap of the Trib. And so from 1984 until he died in 1997, he wrote for the Trib.
Aside from being one of our finest columnists, you'd be hard-pressed to name a guy that's more Chicago in flavor than your dad was.
Yeah, that's the thing. He, you know, he was born and bred in Chicago. There was, he was, you know, the term he used to describe himself was a flat above the tavern youth. His father, you know, owned and ran a tavern. The family lived on the second floor.
Yeah.
And he was tending bar from the time he was 12. And it wasn't just a matter of tending bar. It was like he was the bag man. He would be giving the payoffs to the cops. He would be, you know, handling the mafia guys who would come in for their chunk. He you know, so, I mean, he grew up knowing the city, and he knew, you know, he knew the bullies, he knew the people who were having a rough time, and he knew the stars, he knew everybody who came through Chicago because this is what, you know, this is what he did. He was a typical atypical Chicago guy. I mean, he soaked it up, and he really he knew the city.
All right, so Royko in Love is compounded of a bunch of love letters that he wrote to your mother. How does that differ from his columns? Was he a great writer back then, romantic?
Well, the great thing is about these letters to me is he was already Mike Royko. And the thing was, he and my mother grew up together in the same neighborhood. She was, yeah, it's funny, everybody, you know, who knows Mike Royko, but my mother was an extraordinary woman, and she... my father fell in love with her when he was 8 years old, but he was always a geeky sort of, he didn't have any self-confidence, and they were best friends, but she never knew that he was head over heels in love with her. And so he was about to go off to Korea, and he goes over and he's going to confess his love to my mother, who was, you know, they were, she was still a teenager at that point, And she said, greeted him at the door saying, by the way, Mike, Larry just proposed, I'm getting married. And his heart sank and he didn't say a word. He went to Korea and he talks about this in these letters. And then he gets transferred when the war is ending to Blaine, Washington in the northwest tip of the U.S. And he writes a letter back and gets a letter back from mom saying, by the way, the marriage was a mistake. This is not even a year later. Larry and I are getting a divorce. Mm. So the next letter, and this is, you know, this is really where the letters start in the book. The previous letters to the whole family, just a joking around letter. And then mom responds with this news. And that's where the gates open. He says, I've loved you and forever, and I know I don't stand a chance of marrying you, because she was a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
She was smart. She had everything going for her. And her letter back to him, I don't have her letters, but clearly she didn't discourage him. Didn't say, oh, I feel the same way. But whatever she said just fueled the fire. And that's where there's 114 letters, and they basically go from him wooing her till he then gets a leave and goes back to Chicago, proposes to her, comes back, and then between that time and when he goes back and they get married, then there's like all the letters that he can't believe that she's going to marry him, and you can tell that he's afraid it's going to end. And then the last segment of letters, he comes back from the wedding, and then, yeah, at that point he's basically working toward getting a discharge.
Sure.
And he transferred to O'Hare before it was a commercial airport. So that's the story of the letters. It's really the story of my father going from pining for my mother to winning her heart to them getting married, all in the course of 9 months.
What a love story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this a story you were familiar with, David, before you did research for the book? Did you already know this story or not?
Well, that's funny. My mother, the guy, her first husband, is the guy who proposed to her and she married, was Larry Wozni. And I remember I was about 12 or 13 years old. My mother sat me down with my grandmother and said, okay, I've got a story to tell you, but you cannot ever mention this to anybody, especially your father. Because to that day, the name Larry Wozni would... My father never got over it.
Right.
And so she told me the whole story of everything I just told you. She told me that whole story. I was like, oh, my God.
At 12.
Yeah, and I didn't know she'd had another, that she'd ever been married before. This is all. And so.
No kids by Larry.
No kids. Right? No, okay. Nothing.
They were only married a year.
Yeah. And so I knew about it. But the thing was, that was when I was 12. And so when my father died, I was in my 30s. And by that time, and my mother died when I was 20 years old. She died of a cerebral aneurysm, here today, gone tomorrow kind of thing. So that was 1979. So my father died in 1997. The one and only time I ever heard about the letters and about their, you know, Larry Wozni, was that one conversation. And so it was almost like I was starting to wonder, do I remember correctly? And then after he died, his wife, Judy, sent over a bunch of boxes from the basement of old things. I'm going through it, and all of a sudden I find this folder, and I pull out a letter, and I realize, oh, my God, these are the letters.
Yeah.
My mother had always saved them, and then when she died, my father must have, you know, he saved them. And so I knew about the letters. I almost didn't really believe they existed until all of a sudden there they were. And yeah. It was just the way she had described it.
That is unreal.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
really is. Is it weird looking at your parents? And I know as a 12-year-old kid, it's lovely to see that they're in love, but it's also going, ew. You know, did you have any weird feelings about that? Or by this time when you found the letters, it was like, this is just truly a love story.
Well, by the time I found the letters, it felt like a miracle.
Yeah.
And, but when she first, the thing that just blew my mind when I was 12 was that she had been married to another guy before
yeah.
dad. I mean, that was just...
That's a jolt, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
It wasn't like it was a trauma, but it was just a shock. Because
yeah.
if you knew my mother, I mean, that was the last thing you'd think, that my mother had had another husband. And again, it was... She got married, what I didn't realize until I was going through the stuff researching the letters, I found a picture of her on the wedding day, and it said the date of the wedding, and I realized it was her 18th birthday.
Wow.
She got married to Larry. And so
too young.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I tried to do some research asking some family members who'd been around what it was that split them up. And my aunt, who's not around anymore, she said, I don't really know. She says, I remember hearing something about bad checks. That's
oh,
all.
Really?
But, you know, and I tried to find somebody who was related to Larry when I was doing the research. Nobody,
no luck.
Didn't turn anybody. So if anybody knows Larry Wozniak, who is of Chicago and who would have married my mother in the 1951. Get in touch.
Yeah.
Please, let me know.
What you said is true, David. Your mother was an incredibly striking woman, but it's very hard for me. The Mike Royko that's in my head is your dad in his 50s and into his 60s.
Yeah.
So to see a young version of him
oh.
is very jarring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. People sometimes say when they see the picture, oh, my God, he looks like Sean Penn.
He does.
Like, he does.
He really
a more
does.
Attractive Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Well, he
very
would have been
handsome.
Thrilled. Well, see, he would have... When you read the letters, you realize he didn't feel like he was handsome. He felt like he was the geekiest guy.
Well, in comparison to your mom's beauty, do you mean, or just
yeah.
overall? Yeah.
Well, I think overall, but especially, I mean, my mom was the, she, you know, I mean, describing her and her beauty and all that, I'm afraid sometimes it makes it feel like that's all she was. She was, I mean, she skipped 2 years in high school. She got, you know, she could have had a full ride at Northwestern University, mm-hmm. you know, for free at age 16. She turned it down because the only major they offered her to get into was home ec. And my mother was not interested in home ec.
Yeah.
Think about that, Northwestern University in the late 1940s.
Yeah.
It's home ec. But, so she was really, you know, my father wouldn't fall for just somebody who was very, very beautiful.
Right.
I mean, she had it all. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a love story that I really never get over.
The book is called Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. His son David is the author, and we'll come back and discuss this more. And then Joby Cerny is here. He does the audio book, and we'll do some readings if that's okay with all of
sure.
you.
Beautiful.
All right, we'll pick that up in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WG. David Royko is here. His dad is the legendary Mike Royko, and the book is called Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. It tells the story, the little-known story, of the love affair between our greatest columnist and his wife, Carol. Joby Cerny also here. Joby, explain your involvement in this. How did you come to fall into this storyline?
Well, I'm an actor, and I've been an actor for a long time, and I thought I could do a credible part with Mr. Royko.
So you were already aware, of course, of Mike's his speech patterns, his voice.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
It's not so, you're not doing an impression of Mike. It's a tribute to Mike, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Are we going to read something? Is there something that
yeah,
you guys have?
Give me the intro for the Duckman.
Oh sure. Mike, just a little part
yeah,
right here.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Bob Duckman was, Joby's going to read a letter that refers to Bob Duckman. And at the time, Bob Duckman was my mother's brother. He was
mm-hmm.
my Uncle Bob. And he was also an undertaker.
Oh.
So.
All right.
Okay.
Hi, folks. Another year and another letter from the Bad Penny. I'm now stationed in Washington, 7 miles from the Canadian border. It's great up here. They have weekly barn dances, and during our time off, we can chase rabbits or carve names in redwood trees. Nothing like a social life. The next time I get a leave, I'll probably arrive home wearing buckskins and carrying a flintlock rifle. The Air Force seems determined to keep me separated from civilization. The local farmers are friendly, though. They probably reckon I'll give them a mite of help with the spring plowing. I guess I should apologize for not coming over during my leave, but I lost so much weight in Korea that I thought Bob might not recognize me and toss me in a pine box. I had a pleasant leave, but it flew by so quickly that I didn't get around as much as I would have liked to, and I spent a part of it traveling back and forth from Washington. Needless to say, I left Korea somewhat gaunt, but still intact. The first condition I attribute to bully beef and dehydrated potatoes we lived on, the second to the fact that on guard duty, when sighting a Korean, I yelled help instead of halt. All in all, it was pretty interesting. But if they ever want me to go back there again, three of us will arrive at the dock. Me and the two cops who will have to escort me. I'll probably take another leave this summer, so you can expect me to pop in then. I've been here 4 days now, and I haven't let the family know where I am, so I'll close now and give them a buzz on the phone. When you have time, drop me a line. Mountain Man Mick.
And I'll say one thing about, you asked me if he was Mike Royko yet.
Yeah.
And the thing was, Dad was, as I said before, he considered himself a working man, and he always wrote with purpose. And I really feel like these letters, he was already, you know, I mean, he was a guy who never went to college. He barely graduated high school, and he was already, great at writing. And I think this is writing for a purpose like he never had before.
Right.
I mean, this is writing. This was a letter before the actual letters to my mother started. This is a letter where she responded and said, I'm getting a divorce.
Yeah. You know, it's so obvious there. So I'm guessing your dad at that point was probably right around 20, 21, 22.
21 years old.
21. Even as a 21-year-old, he already understood how to paint a picture, how to come at something with a certain attitude. And that was at 21 years old. That's amazing.
Yeah, he was. Well, and it's amazing when I went through the letters, all the various people who would be quoting. He was quoting, not even citing it as Beethoven, but from Beethoven's Immortal Beloved. Mm. He was citing Schopenhauer. He was I mean, here's a guy who, he wouldn't have graduated high school if it weren't for the fact that he went to Central Y after getting kicked out of several high schools, and he liked it because it was a lot of GIs returning and he could smoke in the classroom. That's why he finished high school. So,
and it's one thing for him to tell you these stories, but isn't it something else to read it in his writing and with his thoughts right there? How emotional were you when you were reading these?
Well, it was to see Dad. I mean, I was in my 30s when I found these letters, and I'm reading Dad at 21, 22 years old. So all of a sudden, here I am in my 30s as a solid adult reading him when he's basically just coming out of being a kid. And that's the thing about hearing Joby read these too, because a couple of people have said, well, does he sound like your dad? And I said, well, the fact is, I don't know what Dad sounded like when he was 21.
Right?
I knew what he sounded like after a lifetime of drinking and smoking. You know, he had a very deep voice.
Yes, he did.
And so, you know, how Joby sounds, sure. That's maybe how Dad sounded at age 21. You know, it's...
I'm sure you've thought about this. This would make for a great movie.
Oh,
you already know that.
Oh, I want to see it.
Yeah.
You know, and...
The last guy to play your dad, I think, in a movie was John Belushi.
You're right.
Right.
You're right. Continental Divide.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Belushi punched me in the movie.
He did, didn't he? I forgot you were in that.
You were in Continental Divide.
Yeah. Wow. So everything does tie in, doesn't it?
It was a full circle thing.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something. Well, that part, you know.
Wow.
This would make just an unbelievable movie. We were talking off the air about this, too. Your mom and your dad grew up together. She married someone else. That marriage only lasted a year. it really is perfect for a beautiful love story and so perfect for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yep. It's and also, you know, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of Dad passing, and that, that that's another thing that sort of makes it, you know, all the more, you know, poignant for me personally at this point to be.
What are the odds, though, really, that she's just married a year? Wasn't it difficult to get a divorce and stuff back then?
You know, that has also gone over a little bit in the book. And, you know, because nobody was around by the time I found these letters, there's nobody to ask questions about the details. And no. There's little references of things that really piqued my curiosity. You know, some problems with the divorce. And but the thing was also, once again, Dad had a wisdom. He had an understanding of how things worked. I mean, that's the thing. He'd been a bartender since he was 12. He understood how you'd go about doing things, who you would talk to. You know, he was advising her on her money, you know, and how to take care of stuff and how to get a loan and things like that. You know, he was a worldly guy already, you know.
As a testament to your dad's staying power, I can't tell you how many times in the last 6 months or 8 months I've thought about, with everything that's going on politically, how your dad and or Slat Skrobnik would have treated the situation that we're all living through right now. It would have been very interesting to read what he wrote about those things.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine. And the thing is, I'm often asked, what would your father say about this? And people often think they might have some idea, but the thing was that made Dad so brilliant is, no matter what, he was very hard to predict what he would say about something, but by the time you were done with the column, you certainly got it. And if he didn't change your opinion, you certainly had a different view of something.
Yeah, yeah.
Very effective.
Guys, congratulations. The book is a must-read. It's Royko in Love, Mike's Letters to Carol. David Royko, who is Mike's son and Carol's son, did a bang-up job on it, and Joby Cerny is involved in the audio portion of the book. Both are available right now, correct, guys?
Audible.com is the Amazon, too, is the audio book. And then, yeah, this is on the book's on University of Illinois, or University of Chicago Press.
Beautiful. Thank you, guys.
Congrats.
Greatly appreciated. A quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, this is very unusual. Actually, I'm not even going to start to explain this. Mark Remillard is here from ABC News because I love this idea, but I don't want to get any parts of it wrong. Mark, thanks for being here. How are you?
Very good.
All right, there is a little bit of controversy right now as to what is real news and fake news. And it's possible we may find out through our school system. Explain.
That's right. So obviously, as we've heard this discussion of fake news ramping up throughout this political season, and it's still something we're hearing about in the news every day, even from the president himself, social media sites, news organizations have been trying to crack down on this, but now some teachers say that they can start to work to educate students from elementary school up to colleges and university on how to distinguish fake news, how to identify it, how to better protect themselves from being fooled or duped by fake news. And so these are things that teachers are starting to implement in their courses. We haven't necessarily seen anything on the books per se. So what I mean by that is nothing, no direct changes in curriculum in schools yet, but teachers taking on the issues themselves, and primarily in civics classes. So you're talking about government and politics, and you're doing research and looking at news, these kinds of things at high school levels, let's say, and determining and trying to teach them how to go through and source things to say, okay, this article would appear to be fake versus this article from another source may be true. And so these are things that obviously is concerning just in our general society, but something that teachers are looking at trying to help students with.
I am hoping against hope that the teachers can go on Facebook and teach all the Facebook users how to determine which are fake and real stories. Because that's, you see that so much, and you have people that have all this vitriol that post something on both sides of the spectrum. And it's like, God, the story isn't even true. This website isn't even true.
Yeah. And that's part of it. Now, we haven't seen any reports of teachers necessarily say, hey, let's pull up a Facebook feed and go through and see, okay, look at this one's fake, this one's real, this one's fake. But the general common sense or the general critiquing eye to look at these things and determine what might be fake and what might be not. So, for example, there's a teacher in Raleigh, North Carolina, who's started to encourage his students to use common sense when they're questioning whether a story is true. If you hear the headline, Pope endorses Trump. that former President Barack Obama has banned the Pledge of Allegiance from schools. Does that sound plausible to you, first off? So that's one example. Then look at web addresses, the URLs. A lot of times these fake news sites will be CNN.com.something, and so you'll click on those things. It will look like a legitimate URL, but it's not. And it is a site determined to look like CNN, but it's not, or ABC or any of these other media companies. And so teaching kids to look for those things. And then also trying to look for articles that simply seem to be there to rile people up. For example, if former President Obama during the last election had banned the Pledge of Allegiance from schools, that's certainly going to fire up a lot of bases and a lot of people and get a heated debate going, these kinds of things. And so those are ways that they can teach students to have a more discerning eyes. And it's different now than when a lot of us were in school, where especially as the internet came in, I remember when I was in college and in high school, it was simply about checking when you were writing a research paper, hey, you can't cite Wikipedia per se on your paper. But now it's you need to look at exactly what sources you're looking at to make sure that these are accurate facts.
You know, what makes it even more confusing, Mark, is the fact that the president himself cites legitimate news sources as fake news sources. When the president is saying CNN is fake news, mm-hmm. that can be very confusing to a child, couldn't it?
Absolutely, and that's actually part of the problem. One of these teachers discussed at Keene University in New Jersey, who began teaching a course on news literacy, and I think that's the term that you're going to start hearing a lot now, media literacy, news literacy, as people are discussing this more and more, and especially if we talk about possible changes to curriculum in school. But so this teacher, it teaches a course on news literacy and says it's really difficult because fake news can lead to politically sensitive territories. There's a lot of disagreement over there sometimes about what might be fake and what's not. What's a legitimate news source and what isn't? Gone are the days where mainstream television and newspapers and magazines are the gatekeepers. Now there's this wide open world of the internet. And so you do have publications that are slightly slanted one way or another, or even farther one way or another. And so it does lead to a politically sensitive territory, but this teacher certainly says that their goal is to simply teach people, regular people, journalistic ethics, these kinds of things, on validation of sources, validation of facts, these kinds of things that may not have been taught to people who weren't studying communications or journalism before, and now trying to blend those over into civics courses and things so that everybody's starting to learn, okay, wait, does this sound right, or is this from a legitimate source, and have that kind of critique eye.
My youngest son is starting high school next year, and we did like a future freshman night. And now, in addition to government classes or taking the Constitution, they all have to take a civics class as mm-hmm. well, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And learning about these kinds of things, the civics and government courses, it seems like some of these teachers, like I said, are trying to implement this kind of teaching about what might be fake news, how to determine what is fake news, into those courses, that it doesn't necessarily have to be a separate course. You don't necessarily have to take a media literacy course per se. Now, in California, two Democratic lawmakers there have actually introduced state bills to try and combat this. One is looking at a curriculum change that would require civic online reasoning, these kinds of things that would allow people to discern what fake news is. And then there's another senator who's introduced a bill that would require basically one of those new literacy courses, a separate course on this. So there are efforts underway to maybe change the way schools deal with this, but currently right now it seems like at least there are some teachers or professors who are working to combat this on their own, or at least include this in their material.
Look at how fast this has erupted, Mark. Honestly, a month ago, you might have heard that phrase every once in a while, fake news, yeah. but certainly not to the degree that we're hearing it now, where it's a factor every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And, these sites, some of them are very deceptive. And they were very common, and it was an explosive issue over this last election. And with the rise of the internet and anybody's ability to create a site, and you can code a site that looks just like ABC or USA Today or anything like that, and make it look that way and just change the URL. They can be very, very sneaky. And some of them have motives. Some of them have political motives, that they want to spread this misinformation during the election. to sway the election. Some of them are just looking for ad revenue. They're trying to put ads up on their sites, get a few hundred thousand clicks, and collect ad revenue. Some of them are just trolls. There's a lot of different reasons why people do this, but it's certainly something that has come into the public consciousness. And you know, it'll be interesting to see whether or not the new term that will come into public consciousness is news literacy, which I've seen in about 8 articles today. Right. Everybody's talking about that now. So as people become more aware of this, but certainly this is a discussion that's not going away because it's these sites and these fake articles are still occurring, but also the president himself continues to talk about this stuff, as you mentioned, calling CNN fake news and these kinds of things. And it's very heated and very polarized, and sometimes people want to look at these articles and say, well, this isn't fake news because it's what I agree with. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily amount to fact.
That's what it's getting like right now.
Oh, though. Yeah.
I mean, that's and yeah. It's terrible. Can we still trust factcheck.org?
Yeah, factcheck.org, Associated Press, Facebook, I mean, these are all coming together to at least try and work on things on social media to try and get rid of some of these fake sites, crack down on ads with misinformation, make it easier for users to report. So those three are working together. Fact-checking sites like Snopes are another ones that you can use to fact-check these kinds of things. But, you know, I think the point of this is to really discern this for yourself, is to learn your own ability to students, their own ability to look at sites and say, is this real? Does this ring true? Does this sound like something plausible? How come I've seen this author? How come this site seems to only be written by one author? How come this web URL is different than, or it looks sneaky? These kinds of things. And so these are the things that they're trying to teach people so that they can discern on their own. And that's part of critical thinking that you're supposed to learn in school anyways.
Mark, thanks for the report. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Mark Remillard of ABC News, a legitimate news source from everything I hear.
It's just so crazy now.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? All right, more on this and other topics. If we just talked to Mark Remillard of ABC News. Some schools are now taking it upon themselves to teach the students the difference between fake news and real news, how to best determine what a news story is in terms of its legitimacy.
I had to actually look up what civics class was.
Did you never have a civics class?
Well, we had government, which,
yeah,
you know,
that
is...
That falls under the bracket.
Yeah, but the civics, they're saying it boils down to, it teaches you how to be a citizen of a particular place. Mm. Government, we always had to take the Constitution test.
Right.
In grade school, junior high. And,
right?
Yeah.
They don't pass you if you don't pass that test.
And government, you had to take, but then I think that went away for a while.
You didn't have to memorize the Gettysburg Address?
Is that
no.
the four
did
score?
Did you have to memorize that?
I did, yes.
We didn't have to memorize that, but I remember them, like in fifth grade, they said, just so you know, in 3.5 years, there's a test coming, and if you don't pass that, you're staying.
Right. That was a pre... You have to pass. That's a graduation requirement.
Right.
Or you go to summer school. But I went to that future freshman night, and they said that they have now changed the requirement to include a civics class. And I didn't really know what it was. The study of civics is important because it helps to people to understand how government works and provides people with knowledge and how to influence government as a citizen. Generally speaking, mm-hmm. civics is the study of what it means to be a citizen in a particular nation.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't you usually cover that in your government class?
We didn't call it government class. I think we called it civics, I think. Really? I'm trying to remember. Yeah. But that's where you learned about the different branches of government and what they all did.
Maybe you called it social studies.
Oh, yeah.
It probably was social studies.
Yeah.
But our civics was a part of our social studies class. Like we just for a couple of months switched it to civics.
Well, now it's going to be a requirement for incoming freshmen next year at least.
This reminded me of in fifth grade, we had a couple of days where we learned, this was in Miss Worley's class for social studies.
That's so funny because I had Miss Trimby.
Did you have Miss Trimby?
Yeah, it's like a theme.
Wait, I don't see the connection.
Worley, Trimby.
Mm-hmm.
Still don't see it.
The BY.
How old are you?
The BY at the end.
What's Trimby?
Her name was similar. Worley, Trimby.
I'm so sorry.
They taught us the difference between fact and opinion. We spent three days on fact and opinion. And as clear cut as it seems to be, there was a handful of kids that
didn't get it.
Could not figure out the difference. So Miss Worley would say, all right, if I said the Cubs were the best team in baseball. Would that be fact or opinion? And then the kid would go, well, that's fact. And she'd go, no, it's opinion. It doesn't, just because I like them doesn't mean they're the best team.
It's fact now, though.
This year would end up being fact, I guess.
So he was,
but back then, in 1978, farthest thing in the world from being fact. You couldn't be less of a fact than that. But she would just throw out a bunch of those, and you would just see these kids just melt and go,
I know.
I can't, why is one different from the other?
And how
then you
can
go, those kids
grasp?
Are going to be in problem. They're going to have problems later on.
How can you not grasp that? And sometimes the opinion and facts could be the same. Like the Cubs, for instance. Well,
yeah, I guess in that rare instance, I guess.
I don't think an opinion, I don't think a fact can be an opinion.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I'm trying, I can't think of, I mean, that one is in a cute way. Like the Cubs are the best team in baseball.
I only studied cute, cute things.
Cute things.
I really did.
But, yeah, I think something is either a fact or an opinion. I don't know that it could be both.
Yeah, but that was both.
It's not an opinion. If they're the best, by definition, they're the best. It doesn't. It's not your opinion that they're the best. They are the best.
You might have to word it differently.
It's not your opinion that you're 54. You are 54-ish. I don't know how old you are.
Do your own age.
That's my age.
Same age.
54.
Yeah, same age.
Yeah, but if I said, you know, the Cubs... I think the Cubs are the greatest team in baseball.
Right.
That I think would let you know that's an opinion, but it's actually a fact because they are.
But like they were doing stuff like I'm being.
I know
extreme.
What you mean, and I didn't mean
people
to throw a wrench.
People from Wyoming are stupid.
Right.
And a kid
I
would
know.
Go fact, and you go no, that's opinion. No fact. I've been to Wyoming, and everyone I saw there was stupid. You know that kind of thing. So and that went on for 3 days, and at the end of the 3 days, Miss Worley quit. She said, "I don't want to be a teacher anymore. I can't can't deal with this."
You just sometimes wonder how that just simple thing
right.
cannot click. And then once it does, the kid's like, oh, my
now
God.
Now I get
oh,
it.
Oh, geez. How could I not get that?
Yeah. Yeah. For almost everybody, that was the case. But there were some kids that just, by the end of the three, they were like, I still don't see it.
All right. We need a little help here. Vicky, we don't have a lot of time, but you're a former teacher. How do you tell fact from fiction, from an opinion?
So I taught fourth grade. That's what we taught in fourth grade. I told the kids a fact is something you can prove. For example, if I said Justin Bieber, you know, is the best singer ever, how can you, you can't really prove bestness. But if I said Justin Bieber sold 1 million records last year, that you could prove. And then we talked about how are some ways to prove it. Well, you could look it up. You can ask an expert. You can look it up on the internet. If there's a way you can prove it, it's a fact.
That makes sense.
Can a fact and an opinion ever be the same, like the Cubs instance?
Well, if okay, the instance that you were giving, technically, to prove that it is a fact that they were the best team in baseball, you'd have to look at statistics. You know, well, they won the World Series and
more wins than any other team, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I always used if it's something you can prove, it's a fact. If you can't prove it, it's not a fact.
All right. Well, thank you for clearing that up, Vicky. Steve Bertrand is the best news anchor ever.
Fact.
Total opinion. And I don't even share it.
All right. We'll talk to the man who may or may not be the best newsman ever next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, yeah. Valentine's Day is tomorrow, Bill.
Boy, that sounds sexy when you say it that way. Do more.
She sounded a little like Edith Ann.
Yes.
How low can I go?
Wow, that sounds great.
We are going to be live in action tomorrow at Gabe's Place, which is in Glenwood.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be there from 1 to 3, but come early because Steve Bertrand will be doing his Wintrust business lunch
sure.
there.
Actually, I was going to say, I'm doing the biz lunch there tomorrow, so come and listen to it. And then stay late, because Bill and Wendy will be around afterward.
Look at it, starting already.
There's a weird rivalry.
Someone during my show texted. They said, how can I listen to Bill and Wendy right now? You know, like you might be doing the...
It doesn't start till next month. 19 more shows.
I texted back, you can't.
Yeah, he doesn't listen. Oh, meaning you?
No.
Okay. Well... We all are married. Kevin, you're married now. Congratulations.
Kevin got married.
You're still married?
Yep.
Good job, buddy. There are some...
You lost that bet, Wendy. Pay up.
I did not.
Pay up.
Hey, I did not bet against it.
All right.
You're the person who, at several places we've worked at, when people say they were engaged, I swear to God, every day until their wedding, you would ask, hey, how's it going? Still engaged?
I would never do that. I believe in the sanctity of marriage, and it's not to be taken lightly.
Have you ever seen a bus go by, Wendy, and not thrown someone under it?
No. The answer to that is no.
I don't know. I'm pleading the fifth.
Greyhound has talked to Wendy about possibly doing endorsements.
It's a whole marketing thing.
You're going to throw someone under a bus, make it a Greyhound.
Trailways.
It's a great ad campaign. They should be all about that.
Mega bump.
The FBI is now warning of romance scams that can cost victims thousands of dollars for Valentine's Day weekend. Now, here's
Is one of them flowers?
No.
It's not?
Little candies?
What are the scams?
No, this is... first of all, Valentine's Day is tomorrow.
Yes.
So wasn't last weekend Valentine's Day weekend?
Some people will have celebrated it last weekend, some this upcoming weekend, some on Tuesday, many on Tuesday.
All right. Well, a romance scam typically starts on a dating or social media website.
Whew. Mm-hmm. You're safe.
I'm clean on that one. A victim will talk to someone online for weeks or months. Boy, this takes a lot of planning.
Yeah.
If you got to do it that far in advance. Right. Weeks or months, and they develop a relationship with them, and the other person sometimes even sends gifts like flowers. Well, the victim and the other person are never able to meet, because maybe they're in different locations and they just can't physically meet, with the scammer saying they live or work out of the country, or they end up canceling plans that are made. Then the scammer will say they need money, citing a sudden hardship like they need a visa or emergency medical care. And because you think you're in a relationship with this person, you wire the money to this person as it's directed overseas.
Wait, so you think you're in a relationship with somebody you've never met? Is that possible?
Well, not for me.
I have run into someone who, it's just mind-boggling. But if
they
never
met the person, but they thought they were in a relationship with
them. But they've been communicating with them for months, so they think they've got something going on.
And if you want to believe,
I guess
everything.
That's sad.
I know of a story where, you know, the friends got involved and said, "Look at this. This cannot be."
Yeah.
But if you want to believe it, everything you're told, and you know those scammers, they have a lie for every scenario that your friends present to them. You know.
That's horrible.
It is horrible.
But once it got to the part of, oh, by the way, even though we've never met, I still need I have an emergency surgery that
I
can't
afford. Well, they don't phrase it like that. They say, oh, honey, I really wish I could come visit you.
But I need a new spleen.
I'm stuck in China. My visa has expired. Can you
and
please wire?
And so has my spleen.
No, I absolutely know of people who've...
Oh, no. Really? And would you say, Steve, that they're seemingly intelligent people other than this? You don't have to answer.
All right.
No, I don't know them. I mean, I know.
You know of this.
We're not friends or anything, but I know of the. But so I just think it, you know, you're just blinded when you want to believe something.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but here's an idea. You have to physically meet with the person. I'm not saying consummate the relationship, but you have to have met face to face.
You would hope.
Because, I mean, these are like just pen pals.
Right, right.
Would you send a pen pal money?
I can. No.
Victims can be bilked for hundreds or thousands of dollars this way.
I would select hundreds. Given the option.
See, now this makes me even sadder. The most common victims are women who are 40 to 60 years old.
Does it say your name in there?
Who might be widowed, divorced, or have a disability. So they are preying on these people.
The vulnerable.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Romance scams cost people in Illinois more than $4.6 million
each?
In 2015. No.
That's just Illinois.
That's
a lot of money.
Terrible. Nationally, the scams cost Americans about $203 million.
Oh, no.
My God. It's not uncommon to have someone walk into the FBI in Chicago or into a field office in Illinois and report that they have sent thousands of dollars to someone they met online and they have never even met that person thinking they were in a relationship.
There's only a handful of people that I know, like in real life,
that you'd give money to.
I have to have $18,000.
I would. You only ask family for money, first of all.
Yeah. I guess.
And I've never met some of my family members. I've just become friends with them on Facebook.
Sure.
Well, there you go.
If you meet someone online and it seems, quote, too good to be true, and every effort you make to meet that person fails, watch out, according to the FBI spokesman Garrett Kroon.
How long, I know you're not Garrett Kroon, Wendy, but how long could you string somebody along on the internet before they start to get a little nervous about the fact that you may not exist? Like, could you talk to somebody for weeks or months or years before they go, hey, this is weird. We've never actually met. Wouldn't that hit you as this isn't on the up and up?
Yeah. That's what I mean. These are terribly vulnerable people.
Right.
I know this happens with old people a lot who don't, maybe they've lost their spouse.
Yeah.
And they're so desperate
to be.
Yeah.
Mm.
There's a special place in hell for these scammers. Scammers might send photos from magazines and claim the photo is of them. Come on.
You couldn't tell that picture was from a magazine? Because a magazine picture doesn't look like a real picture. It looks like it's all posed. Hey, I saw you and your family sitting down to a Swanson dinner. You look handsome. The product, they're just holding up the box of Swanson chicken planks. I love that picture of you with the chicken planks. You seem nice.
I was at work. We both worked at another radio station, not together.
Yeah.
And I was working in the morning, and I was on Facebook, and somebody I went to high school with, a window popped up, and it said, Wendy, I am stuck in Great Britain. Strangest thing happened. Someone came in and robbed me, and they took my passport, and I need to get home to my kids. This was a business trip. And is there any way you can forward me some money? And I responded, you know, Rita, I haven't seen you since our 30th reunion.
Yeah.
And I don't really have money to be sending to you. I'm very sorry. I hope you make it home.
Mm-hmm.
And this was many years ago. So yeah. I really thought it was her. Obviously, her account got hacked and somebody sent me an instant message.
Oh.
But I knew her and still wouldn't
right.
do it.
Right.
And then she called me a bad friend. And
well, she's right.
But I mean,
send her the money.
It shocks me. Scammers, like I said, might send photos from magazines and claim the photo is of them with their banquet hungry man dinner. They might say they're in love with the victim or claim to be unable to meet them because they're a U.S. citizen who's traveling or working out of the country. I mean, come on.
I'm amazed that people would fall for that.
So Kroon says, don't send money to this person. The chances of recovering your money are extremely slim. And if you have been scammed, you can go to ic3.gov, file a complaint. But what's going to happen with that? They're not going to get you your money back.
I'd be shocked.
This is really sad. Hi, John.
Hi, Wendy. I listen to you guys all the time, and I just love your guests and your radio repartee. And this type of thing sounds like a classic example between thinking emotionally rather than rationally.
Yeah.
And I guess, but
it does.
In many aspects of life, thinking emotionally will overrule thinking rationally because it's convenient.
I know, but to me, it's hard to become smitten with someone when you haven't seen them face to face.
Because you're thinking rationally. And most people would, unless they're in extreme need.
Yeah.
And it applies to a lot of different areas.
Boy, that's so sad.
It is. Terrific. Listen to that. Or what about that Notre Dame player, Monteo?
Yeah. What was his name?
Monty Tail or something like that with a Chargers.
Right.
Didn't they call it catfishing then or something like that?
They still do. That's
he had a fake girlfriend or something?
Exactly.
Exactly. That was a classic example. I mean, that guy suffered terribly.
They thought it was his fiance, and they had never met in person.
Well, then how can that be your fiance?
He found out that she died, quote unquote, but she didn't die because she didn't exist. It was just somebody scamming him.
Why they call it catfishing, I don't know, but I mean, the guy just really suffered terribly because of that.
Yeah, that's awful.
All right, well, we're here to say if it sounds too good to be true and you haven't met face to face, don't send anybody money. Isn't that pretty much in a nutshell what we're saying?
Yeah,
that's the rational way of thinking. Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you, John.
Thank you, Wendy. Have a good day.
You too. Should we take a break and some more people want to talk about this? We have to help the vulnerable.
We have to. That's why we're here. We're helpers to the vulnerable. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy, and Glenwood is the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. We're going to be there tomorrow. That's right, Gabe's Place from noon until 3, broadcasting live. You can spend your Valentine's Day afternoon with us. We'll give you the chance to win Sweet Alley's Valentine's Day treat boxes filled
with... It's a nooner.
That's with Bertrand.
That's with Steve Bertrand.
We get the oneer.
Steve Bertrand's nooner is what they wanted to call it, and they couldn't.
Sweet Alley's really proud to be part of this broadcast. We will give away some of those. Gabe's Place will offer our listeners a special burger lunch $7.20, $7.20. All you do is visit the events page at WGNRadio.com. You can get all the deets there. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate, Chicago's own Good Hands, home of the Nooner.
Home of the Nooner.
And with Valentine's Day quickly approaching, with it being tomorrow, we wanted to help people because there are a lot of scams out there.
This is so sad.
I know, that are costing many people thousands of dollars in Chicago and in Illinois in general, nationwide. And we were wondering how someone could fall victim to a scam of someone you haven't even met face to face, and they're saying, oh, I need emergency appendectomy, two of them. Could you send me some money? Esther, how does this happen? Is this Esther?
Yes, it is.
Hi there.
Hi. I got a call a couple of days ago. A young man came on the phone and says, hi, Grandma. And I said, hi, how are you? Well, Grandma, I'm not too well. What happened to you? I was in a car accident, and I got hit in the nose, and I have a Band-Aid on. That's why I sound like I do. I said, oh, that's too bad. I said, it's a good thing it wasn't your leg. You'd be in a cast. I said, well, Grandma, I was driving my friend's car, and I ran into the back of the lady, and the police said that it was my fault. So I'm at the police station, and I need $1,000. I went to the bank, but I can't get it for 24 hours. I said, well, you just hang in there. You'll be okay. And then I hung up.
Oh, wow.
Well, at least you were compassionate, Esther.
Hey, my grandson is out of the country. He's in the service. And I know he didn't have a car, a friend, and going anyplace.
But, Esther, you knew that the whole time. You were just playing the game, weren't you?
Right.
That's excellent.
That is excellent. And they didn't try calling back or anything, huh?
Oh, no. I think he really tried to hang up before I hung up. He knew it wasn't going too well.
Well, thank God you were aware of that, because are you hearing this? Some of these people that just send money away, I feel so sorry for them.
Well, I'm 80 years old. I don't have any money to send anybody.
Well, that's a good point, too.
Esther, well played.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you, Esther. You're very kind.
Bye-bye.
Have a good week. Goodbye. Send money. Oh, she doesn't have any money.
Bill.
Well, she knows us. She has a relationship with us. That
She's
other
still
guy
not
was going
to send us money.
I guess not.
What if you have like 5 grandkids and you're not quite sure and you don't want to be rude and say, I'm sorry, honey, which grandkid is this?
Yeah.
Floyd.
Because the guy just said grandma.
Yeah.
Never a name.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good.
Great show.
Thank you, Jim.
My niece had a situation happen like that. Mother passed away. They posted it on Facebook. All of a sudden, about 2 weeks after she had passed and buried that, this guy shows up from Florida that's supposedly a lost, long friend that she can't remember exactly from where or who, but all of a sudden, he's in the mix, and he's telling her, oh, we got to get together, and we can sell this house and take the money and we'll go buy another house somewhere else. I'm in love with you and I'm going to help you through all of this. And we put a kind of a feeler out on it and says, wait a minute, who is this guy? Where's he from? Do you know anything about him? No. So we kind of started trying to do a background check on him and all of a sudden he disappeared.
That's terrible.
But it was through the internet. Unbelievable.
Well, and be careful, people, because a lot of people put too much information up on Facebook. And I got to tell you, these GoFundMe pages, there's way too much information. And you can get that info and really try and scam someone, again, in a very vulnerable position. So,
yes, it is.
Thanks,
that's
Jim.
Sure.
Take care,
right,
Jim.
Take it easy.
Thanks for the call.
Doesn't that make you sad?
Yeah, it's awful. It's terrible.
Good thing you're cheap.
Good thing. So true. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. We'll find out what's coming up next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.